we are shooting ourselves on the foot. For we are not there to find fault to anybody. We are not there to withhand anybody. We are just there to uncover the realities of the challenges so that we come up with solutions for our country. With these few words, ladies and gentlemen, you are welcome. We have the agenda in front of us, Chair. I would like to request the Secretary to give us the apologies, but before that, because this is a new board, we will request to do an exercise of introducing one another. I will start with myself, and from there we'll go to members of parliament who are sitting on my right. They will introduce themselves to the board members, and from there we'll allow the chairperson to lead us how will the board members introduce themselves. My name is Dipuo Lesatijuba. I'm the chairperson of this committee. I will allow the whip to also introduce themselves and we will circulate. Over to you.
Thanks, Chairperson, and good morning to everybody. I'm Dipuo Lesatijuba, a member of this committee.
Morning. My name is Mokseli. I'm a member of this portfolio committee.
Morning, Mr. Boti. I'm Sukile Luyenge. I'm a member of parliament in this committee.
Morning. I'm Geli Mabanda, member of this committee.
Good morning. Eric Marie. I'm Eric Marie, member of the portfolio committee for public enterprises.
Good morning. Arun Singh, member of the committee on public enterprise.
Good morning, Kawem Kwangwa, the Baroque is coming. Thank you.
Good morning, my name is Peter van Dalen. I'm a member of the Energy Portfolio Committee.
Morning, everybody. My name is Rismat Mawunda, member of the Energy Portfolio Committee. Thanks.
Are all honorable members introduced themselves? Can we proceed?
Honorable Chair, Gordon Mackay, Energy Portfolio Committee.
Thank you very much. We'll now hand over to the chairperson of the board to introduce the members, or maybe they would like to introduce themselves.
Thank you, Chairperson. Of the Honourable Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Public Enterprises, I am Ben Gubane, acting chairperson of the ESCOM board. And of course, I'd like to present our acting DG, Department of Public Works, Public Enterprises, and our acting CE, the Brian of Affairs, and I will then request my fellow board members to introduce themselves.
Good morning. My name is Lesembe Kosa, and I'm the Executive Board Member.
Good morning, Chairman and members. My name is Pat Nani, non-executive board member, ESCOM, and also chairman of the board committee on ESCOM recovery and ESCOM build. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Kwaida Mabule, member of board member.
Good morning. My name is Romeo Kamala. I'm the non-executive director. Thank you.
Morning, Honourable Chair Lady, Honourable Members, Mark Pominski, Non-Executive Director of ESCOM and Chairman of the Investment and Finance Committee.
Good morning, Honourable Madam Chair and colleagues. I am Roshi Naidu, Non-Executive Board Member of ESCOM.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, everybody. I'm Lavia Karim, Non-Executive of the ESCOM Board.
Thank you very much. We now know each other, so it's just introduction. When we go out of that door, or I'm telling you, once you go out of that door, we start to think, oh, what did he say his name or her name is? But this exercise is very important for today's conference. There's another honorable member who just came in, two members, I think I will allow them to introduce themselves.
Thank you, Chairperson. I extend apologies for being late. My name is Natasha Matoni, and I'm the Dear Shadow Minister for Public Enterprises.
Sorry for being late. I'm Pumzile Van Dam from the DA, and I'm a member of the Public Enterprises Committee.
Thank you very much. I see some members of ESCOM, executive members of ESCOM. I think it will be proper for them also to introduce themselves.
Thank you, Chair. A man on a hot seat. Thank you, Chair. My name is Ryan Munese. I'm the acting chief executive of ESCOM. And I will ask the members of the ESCOM executive committee to introduce themselves.
Honorable Chair members, my name is Mongez Ndokolo, head of generation.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I'm Elsie Poulet, Security Forces, ESCOM.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Abraham Asamo, Edginet Group Capital Division.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and members. My name is Nonkuru Govelesi. I'm the acting Chief Financial Officer.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and members. My name is David Avender. I'm the head for Transmission and Sustainability.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Ayanna Noah. I look after distribution and customer services. Thank you.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen and Honourable Members. Like I indicated earlier on that this is an extraordinary meeting, I want to make a proposal that you will guide me. I wanted us to move away from the normal presentations we have. We start by engaging issues. I think honorable members have got questions to ask the board members. As I indicated, as we convene this meeting specifically because the recent development at home and the issues we wanted to understand better. And if it's allowed, I will say ESCOM should just move into critical areas based on what I said earlier on, and from there we'll have a discussion around that, and members will have to come in also to ask the questions. We will allow the chairperson to give us a direction who will lead us into the presentation. Or before the presentations, maybe the chairperson also wants to say a word or two regarding today's meeting. It's up to you, chairperson. If none, then we'll request you to allow the acting CEO to give us a presentation.
Thank you, chairperson and honorable members. I will move straight and ask the CE to set the tone for this meeting.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, in as far as the issues that were raised are concerned, I mean, the first one was customs. We have this report that ESCOM has a board. We have an acting chairperson. We have executives that are in place. Four executives have been suspended. And the reasons for their suspensions are now under investigation. There is a company that has been appointed to the investigation, and it will report to the board and to the minister within 3 months. It is my understanding that they started working on Monday. Secondly, from a financial point of view, it's my assessment that ESCOM is not, in fact, in a very bad financial position. ESCOM made profit of 31 billion in the last year. The gearing is high at about 65%, but it's stable. It has not deteriorated over the last 4 or 5 years. From a cash position, ESCOM has got a substantial amount of facilities that have been negotiated but not drawn down, which means that it is quite possible for us to negotiate to draw down on quite a number of facilities. In addition, the Treasury has made a commitment to give Eskom about 73 billion, which I believe will be given in two tranches during this financial year. So, with that additional income from the Treasury, we do not think that Eskom is about to be declared bankrupt or insolvent. We will be engaging with the rating agencies to find out what it is that they would like to see for Eskom to be re-rated investment grade, and we will do everything that they say we should do to bring it back to a respectable investment grade rating. Chair, Eskom has a big program of 580 billion. Which is made up of 8,000 projects, talking about 280 billion. Of the projects, 159 billion will be spent on new capacity. 29 billion will be spent on major overhauls that are capitalized. These overhauls are part of the maintenance program. 63 billion will be spent on refurbishment. 10 billion will be spent on custom connections, new customer connections, and about 90 billion will be spent on environmental, safety, regulatory that affect Eskom's business, that are impediment in Eskom's business. Environmental issues are quite big. As far as labor unrest is concerned, Chair, I'm happy to report that after investigating, Eskom has caught 46,000 employees. Eskom's employees have never been on strike since 1998. However, Eskom is building several power stations, and in the building of the power stations, it has employed contractors that are building the power stations. Contractors from the construction industry and from all industries that are required to build the program. It is the employees of the contractors that have been on strike. In fact, over the last 5 years, the labor unrest has happened at two of the main projects, which is Kusile and Ndilili, and the people that have been on strike there were members or employees of our contractors. Eskom's role in the process has been to try and help the contractors and the unions that have a responsibility to build it, because they've been contracted by Eskom to build the power station, to come to some agreement. And so, in fact, what has happened there, they wondered that we have been failed by private sector companies and their labor relations. And as far as maintenance is concerned, we have quite a significant fleet of generators that generate electricity. About 82% of our generation capacity comes from coal. 6% of gas turbines, nuclear 4%, 1,860 megawatts. Power advantage is 3.5%, hard storage about 6%, hydro 1%, and wind about 5%. And so, can I send the slide now to show you? This slide, Chair, as I was saying during the whole of this week, is a slide that explains to me the problem that we have with maintenance and load shedding in a way that even an 8-year-old or a 10-year-old child can understand. We are the demand for electricity on a typical day, and on the days of the 20th of April, and this demand from day to day and this time of the year, but generally the demand is about 2,000 megawatts. The installed capacity in South Africa is 43,000 megawatts. So we have enough electricity to provide to South Africa. However, because of the maintenance backlog, and because we have been delinquent in maintenance, we have now decided to upgrade maintenance, to catch up with the backlog of maintenance. Because if we do not catch up with maintenance, we will lose the capacity that it is on to below what demand is. And in fact, the demand is growing because, as you know, we are continuing with questions. So we need about 5,400 megawatts of electricity to shut down and do air maintenance. However, on a typical day, we also lose about 6,800 megawatts due to unplanned, which is the things that are breaking in the system because they have not been maintained properly. And so, the 6,800 and the 5,400 reduce our installed capacity to 28,000 megawatts, which is below the 32,000 that we need at peak. So the shortage is about 3,000 megawatts. The 3,000 megawatts represent the extent to which we typically need. So that number will be different depending on the day and on time of the year. So we need 3,000 megawatts to be able to do both plant and to deal with the breakages without load shedding. So if you look back, you will see that if we stopped plant maintenance completely, we would in fact be able to supply electricity and meet demand, and the unplanned, and also take the unplanned breakdowns. So I think this slide actually explains it very simply. So the question then that we discussed at EXCO and at the board was to do plant maintenance and to handle the breakages as we go along in such a way that we don't load shed. What would it take to do maintenance without load shedding? And that is 3,000 megawatts. The last one in green. That is the additional capacity that we need. If that 3,000, we don't need it because we don't have enough electricity to survive on Africa. We need the 3,000 because the 3,000 will allow us to do both through maintenance without load shedding. So the problem that we have with load shedding at the moment is that we have to choose between not load shedding and not doing maintenance. And Eskom has obviously taken the more difficult decision, which is continue with the load shedding, try and manage the unplanned breakdowns prudently or as far as we can, but also start the program to educate people about reducing the demand, because if you reduce demand, you also give us space to do maintenance. Now, there has been talk, I think, in the last 2 days of a maintenance festival over the weekend. The reason that what is like I had with maintenance festival for the first time, and as you can see, it's a very steady festival. It's because when you have a long weekend, the demand for electricity actually goes down. But the factories are shut down, a lot of the places that consume those electricity are shut down, and people are at home, and households use less electricity than their business. So when businesses are shut down, the businesses that use a lot of electricity are shut down over the weekend. They give us space in the grid because there's less demand to do maintenance. So when you get long weekends like the one that is coming, the engineers are very happy. They call it a festival, so they go in and do as much maintenance as possible. And in short, that is our problem of load shedding. Where can we get an additional 3,000 megawatts so that we can do maintenance without load shedding? And I think it is a problem that we are capable of solving if we just have a couple of more weeks. There are a lot of solutions to the problem. The IPPs, we can see if we can get 3,000 megawatts. We announced 100 megawatts from a wind farm just outside Port Elizabeth 2 days ago, series, and we'll be looking at other initiatives. But our problem really is to get the 3,000 megawatts. the possibility of even bringing in budget to supply the 3,000 megawatts is not, could not be included. The only thing that could restrict us is the cost. So what cost would we bring in the budget? So just to let you know, just that in the house that we are looking at the project of the 3,000 megawatts. And Chair, takes care of the issue of maintenance. Just to put everything in perspective, Chair, this slide is actually very powerful for me. The fact of the matter is that 96% at one time when we have state 3 load shedding, we still have 96% of our grid. We still have 96% of electricity supply. So if you take the green, if that whole slide was to be green and there's no rain, means there is no load shedding, then 100% demand that has been met by supply of electricity. But the red, which is the very small part of the green, represents the times and the amount of load shedding that we had. Now, our African focus has been on the red, not on the green, on the fact that every single one of us in this room, when we woke up this morning and we reached out for the light switch and we pressed it, the light actually came on. People don't talk about that, and that is the game. On a typical week, during stage 3 load shedding, which is the worst kind of load shedding, which is the worst load shedding we've had so far, I'm told that a typical family will not have electricity for 10 hours a week. If you calculate the number of hours that are in a week, which is about 168, it means that for 158 of the 168 hours, Eskom does provide electricity. And it is not on that that we focus. We actually focus on, say, 10 hours that are not provided during that week. And so we would appeal that let us not start beating up the Eskom to the power as if we are in a situation that we don't have 90% electricity 90% of the time, and we only have 10% of the time. We have electricity 96% of the time during stage 3 of load shedding. During stage 1 of load shedding, it's even less. During stage 1 of load shedding, a typical family will not have electricity for between 2 to 4 hours in a week, and that is about 164 hours out of 168 hours in a week. So that is the perspective here. And the reason we're having load shedding is not because we have a systematic and systemic problem. It's not because we have a systemic or a structural problem where we structurally do not have enough electricity to demand. Structurally, we have more electricity to meet demand than what demand requires. The 43,000 installed capacity. It is just that at this point in time in history, we have to catch up with maintenance. For whatever reason, that we have a backlog and we have to catch up with. That is the reality that we face today, that we have to catch up with maintenance. And the fact that we have to catch up with maintenance results in load shedding. It's not a permanent situation. As I said earlier, Eskom has in fact a very big capital expenditure program. Last year, Eskom spent 60 billion rand on capital expenditure. Transnet spent just over 30 billion. In fact, Eskom's contribution to fixed capital formation in South Africa is the biggest in the country at the moment. It is even bigger than that of Transnet. It is a privilege for me to work for a company that had a more substantive capital expenditure program. Not that the partner's one is lower, but there is possibility here to even improve what we have. It's not that we have a structural program, but that one has also thought about the future. The thing that we need to make to meet future demand of electricity by investing in capital expenditure. And this is a program that has been running for the last couple of years. Thank you, Chair. That is too short because we did not follow the presentation that was prepared at your request. The executives are available to answer the specific questions that are too complicated for them to answer. Thank you.
I don't know if maybe your executives would like to add or make some input on what you have said or elaborate. If none, then I will now allow another member to raise questions of clarity and input. Can I identify hands? I will start with Honorable Singh. He'll be followed by Honorable Mopanda and Honorable Dr. Lienge, follow her, and Honorable Mazzoni. Hey, I struggle to pronounce the name. You will follow him, and in this order, then we'll take the next round.
Yeah, thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I was waiting for colleagues to find their seat. Good morning, everybody. Chairperson, firstly, I want to appreciate that ESCOM's got a new acting board. The chairman, Dr. Nguana, who was once my premier, and he did a very good job in KwaZulu-Natal. Now we can do the same here at ESCOM in terms of offering leadership and guidance together with these board members. And also appreciate the fact that the acting CEO comes with a pedigree behind him, Brian Muller, who done very well, and you do know that we've met him on a number of occasions. But Chairperson, there are fundamental issues that need to be addressed, and I like your stance in the beginning when you said we are not here to point fingers, but we are here to see how we can make a contribution to South Africans in general, because the questions that we would ask are questions that ordinary South Africans would be asking, and we represent them through the different political parties that are here. Questions like, well, how long will load shedding continue? And I know Mr. Molefe has given up a month. Is there stage 4 load shedding on the cards? Does ESCOM have a plan? When we hear about this mysterious plan, why would you plan for stage 4 and you know, allegedly talk about the army being deployed and parliament being shut and other strategic places being shut if there's going to be a complete blackout in the country? Is there any truth in the kinds of reports that we see in the media about stage 4 load shedding? Chairperson, I couldn't quite understand the issue of the suspension of the 4 executives. Where are we? It months now that they were suspended by the previous chairman of the board. We were informed and we read that it had the support of the president of the country. So we feel that there must have been some prima facie evidence for that suspension. If we are hearing today, Chairperson, that some consultancy company is going to take another 3 months or so to look into the reasons why they should or should not continue to be suspended, can we have more clarity on it? Because it is certainly a grey area that needs to be addressed moving forward. My second question for now, Honourable Chairperson, is that Mr. Molefe has thrown some big figures at us, figures that we will never dream about in our lifetime. Billions of rands. But is the problem at ESCOM a question of money? To me, it seems that we've got enough money. We seem to be throwing the money into a bottomless pit. Do we have the capacity, not at management and board level, but lower down at the skill level, at qualified engineer level, to deal with the issues of maintenance and other problems that exist on a day-to-day basis? Because, you know, there's a saying that if you take care of the pennies, the crumbs will take care of themselves. And are we taking care of the pennies? Are we making sure that at the grassroots level of the operation of ESCOM, we've got qualified personnel to deal with maintenance and other issues? Because having all the money in the world is not going to help, you know, if we don't have people that can handle the problems. So the question of capacity. We understand there's chronic mismanagement at certain levels. We understand that it is alleged that certain people at the high levels of ESCOM have had the fingers in the cookie jar. And I'm saying allegedly, have had the fingers in the cookie jar when it comes to tenders and huge contracts that are awarded. So we like to know as a committee on behalf of South Africans whether that is happening. Do you have capacity? Can we say this chronic mismanagement of ESCOM? Would I be right in saying that? That this chronic mismanagement. The last question for now, Honourable Chairperson, is the Molefe indicated to us that we have been delinquent with maintenance. Now I know it's not him, I know it's not the current people, but there must be people who are sitting even here in this room that have been responsible for managing maintenance over the last 20 years or so, or even 10 years. Are there such people in this room? What have they been doing? And how are we going to make sure that moving forward, we have the right people to offer leadership so that this planned maintenance takes place in an orderly way and that we can assure South Africans and investors outside of the country who are really having doubts about investing in our country now with the electricity problem. Can we assure them that things are going to turn around and win? That's concerned about. I think for now, I'll let you know.
Thank you, my questions are on the, what has the board done to ensure that the bill program meets the intended results in terms of the transformation of the economy? And the other one is on the issue, the challenges ESCOM is facing with regarding to coal supply agreements. If you can update me on that, but the other one was on maintenance, but I think a lot of things have been much fun. Thank you.
Thank you, Reverend. Let me also appreciate the presentation, which is an overview and what we expected to hear today, and also congratulate both the President, Chief Executive and the Chairperson on their new appointments to rise to the occasion, and we hope that they will do. My first question, Chairperson, is with regard to the board's constitution. I would want to check whether the board committees are properly constituted in this institution. Secondly, whether there are members of the board who are convicted in their roles in the board committees in line with the King Code government. And then, what is the average number of companies that the current board members are currently serving? Then, whether the board members have the necessary skills set in fulfilling a role as ESCOM director. They also said to check as to whether our current directors not having a conflict of interest, and how is this addressed by the board? Because as the board with the obligation even to foresee problems, how do you then contemplate to deal with such issues? Whether are we likely to see new staff adjustments in order to correct the MOC district as a decision? And lastly, both the acting chairperson and acting chief group executive, on the few number of days that you're there, have they checked whether, have they identified whether there is feasibility and desirability on the part of the executive management and the general staff in the scope to rise to the occasion? I'm going to start.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, a few things. I think it's actually quite unfair that Mr. Molefe has to come here today to ask questions because he's only been in his position for a few days. He's going to be in the front of all the problems. But please understand, Mr. Molefe, we know that these problems are not caused by you. We know that they have been coming for years and years and years. So never take personal offense to anything that's brought forward today. You
everyone, just unfortunately now the torchbearer of the company and has to answer for problems that occurred before you arrived. But from the Democratic Alliance, let me tell you that no one in this country hopes that you succeed in your role more than I do. And I wish you a great deal of luck because I think you're certainly going to need it. Chairperson, the first point with what Mr. Malefi showed us was he showed us the graph that he said an 8-year-old would understand. And I absolutely agree with that. An 8-year-old would understand that graph. And an 8-year-old would also understand if you're in a national crisis. Because it has got to the stage where, as Mr. Malefi did, when we turn the lights in the morning, we heave a sigh of relief. And as South Africans, we become so used to load shedding that we think it's normal. It is not normal. We should not live in a country where we are thankful that when we put on the light that she stay on. We are so used to load shedding that load shedding is becoming a stage of normality. And as South Africans, we must join together and say, no, this is not a stage of normality and this is not a good thing. Well, we understand that we need load shedding so that we don't have national blackouts. We cannot, as South Africans, sit back and say it's acceptable. It is not acceptable. And we've been told by Mr. Brown that we can expect load shedding for the next 2 years. So for the next 2 years, we are going to be living in abnormal situations. And I think we need to be very clear about that. As South Africans, we must not become complacent, and we must stay angry about the fact that Eskom that has a complete and utter monopoly on energy capacity in our country and reducing energy capacity for our country has held us to ransom and single-handedly kill our economy. Because in a recent article that I read in the Financial Mail, a very good point was made. No financial investment will be made in a country that cannot ensure a secure energy supply. And it makes sense. What country will want to know that for 2 hours a day they're down for business? And when things are really bad, for 10 hours a week they're down for business. No one wants to know that. Chairperson, I'm very pleased to hear 21 billion rand in profit. I'm hoping that these Eskom's going to change their request of a 25% increase in tariff, because it seems that all is quite good, especially now the fact that Treasury is injecting another 3 billion. So Ms. Malefi has made me very happy and very positive in hearing that Eskom's financial situation isn't as dire as we thought it was. And I think South Africans might heave a sigh of relief now knowing that 25% might not be required. So I'd just like a little bit of explanation on that because, you know, now that we know Eskom's pretty healthy, I think that's been allowed. That's a good thing. Chairperson, what interests me is the difference that has been declared by Eskom, and it was done last week, as to why we've gone from stage 3A and B load shedding to stage 4. Because 3B meant that 4,000 megawatts were shed. And now we've just taken the B away and now we've collected 4. Now, while we understand what that means, the general public doesn't understand what that means, and it's created mass confusion. So once again, and I've said that many times before, Eskom needs to improve its communication to the South African public, because people literally went into emergency mode when they defeated stage 4 load shedding. South Africans didn't realise that there's 3A and 3B, because why would they? And the next thing we heard, stage 4 had been implemented. But we'd actually been stage 3B a week before. So it's this kind of lack of communication, Chairperson, that I think is highly problematic. Chairperson, and I'd also like to know about the salaries and the bonuses that are being paid to Eskom executives. We've heard about various ex-CEOs that received extra bonuses of over 5 million rand just for leaving Eskom. You know, and I think it's quite an insult if your company actually pays you to leave. That's very worrying. Chairperson, we know that the executives in Eskom are some of the top earners in the country. Now, if we are turning to the country and saying we need to increase our tariffs because these tariffs will ensure that we can build and we can maintain, I would like an assurance from Eskom today that they will stop any salary increases for their company executives and ensure that no bonuses will be paid out, because in the 2013-2014 financial year, over 11 million rand worth of bonuses were paid out. And in my opinion, when you can't keep lights on, you shouldn't get a salary, never mind a bonus. Chairperson, I'd also like an assurance from Eskom's new executive that their KPIs will be relooked, because KPIs will be met, because their targets, quite frankly, I or an 8-year-old child couldn't reach those targets. So
So while tasks are still being met, it means people are being seen to do their jobs when in actual fact the lights aren't going on. A chairperson, I would like to see a KPI that says keep the lights on. And once they achieve in KPIs that they keep the lights on, chairperson, I will be happy. As a chairperson, there was a question about Operation Breaking Board. It broke in newspapers a couple of weeks ago that although we were promised that there was no system in place, should we achieve a national blackout because there was never any risk of it. It turns out that in actual fact there was an Operation Breaking Door that is in place for what should happen if South Africa is in a total blackout. And I would like to know from ECOM what plans are in place should there be a national blackout, because it is, let's be honest, it's a huge possibility. If three of our power stations go out and cannot provide power to the country, and we've now heard about the recklessness in maintenance backlog, this could actually happen, and I would like an assurance to ESCOM that this country will not sit for 2 weeks without light, and that ESCOM has a plan, should the worst actually happen, as to how they would put the lights back on. And then finally, Chairperson, what I would like to know from ESCOM is, would they agree that when the light in the country cannot stay on, it's time for a national crisis to be declared, and when the Deputy President himself is called upon to create the war room of some of the top minds in our country, which we were very, very pleased about, occurred. I would like to know from ESCOM, we were told by Minister Brown that the board was not communicating with the war room, and that worried me profusely. And I'd like to know from ESCOM's executives whether or not they are now communicating with the war room and had regular meetings with the war room. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. I don't know whether we should allow them to respond and then go to the second batch of questions, or should we take all of them at once? All of them at once. Okay, let's go to the last round. So we'll go to Honourable Marren. Honourable Member from NAD, the two of you will follow each other. Honourable Teddy, then Honourable Ranto, Honourable Guangu, Honourable Kandam, and the last one who just came in is Honourable Murabella. He did the presentation in any way. In that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think three questions. And the first one is relating to the municipalities in South Africa. What are we going to do? What does ESCOM can do, and what are we going to do with the Minister of Local Government in regards to the 80% of outstanding debt of municipalities owing to ESCOM? Because that has a serious impact on the cash flow of ESCOM. Are we going to address this, get this done for once and all, that we can't have like municipalities owing up to so many millions to ESCOM? Second one. So, but the difference between the two major projects is Kusile and Dubi. And we have the most problems we have is at the Dubi. Now, the executive of ESCOM, did they really look into the various contracts as with the various companies with the difference between Kusile and Dubi? And is there a way to get out of contracts with certain contractors that we always have now serious problems with it with Dubi and maybe replacing with other contractors that will ease this thing with the strikes? Because I get this feeling there's a window of opportunity by some contractors or their employees to actually explore, because they know the crisis that South Africa is in, and that way they can negotiate something much higher as far as income is concerned. And the last question is, the winter is on hand. We're actually now in the end of April, and May, as you know, is like starting coming on the winter term in South Africa, and the demand surely will rise as far as electricity is concerned. Is there any small additional suppliers coming online shortly in regard to sun energy or wind turbines or anything that could ease this demand for us? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. During the presentation, you referred to years of no maintenance, and that is part of the problem we are sitting at the moment. with this big problem in South Africa. In fact, it's quite horrific, and I think it should be punishable. Who is going to take the blame for this? Is it the hazard that they have to make sure that you actually do the maintenance on the work, or is there somebody in ESCOM that is going to be punished for this? Because, I mean, it can't just happen that you say, well, it's happened now, and now nothing follows up. And where has the money for the maintenance shortfall of 70 billion rand gone? No, I would like to know that. And then, if ESCOM is not sustainable as the current form, why has the auditors not qualified your annual report? And if it is sustainable, why then is there a war room and extra committees, two CEOs, and then a 25% emergency price? I mean, if you are sustainable, surely this shouldn't happen in such a company. And then I would also like to know from you the contracts you assigned, which are the embedded derivatives with the aluminium smelters. They are sitting with the electricity that we so desperately need, and they are getting it at a fraction of the cost that he and you are paying for electricity in South Africa. They are paying between 15 and 20 cents a unit, and for that there are special clauses in the contract that allows you to switch them off. So are you switching them off when the rest of the country is bleeding money and the economy is being damaged to an extent that it's costing this country between 20 and 60 billion rand for every month that there is load shedding going on? You know, it's the time that we look these contracts and find out if the quality is so bad, if it's really worth our while to honor these contracts and not maybe pay the fine if there is some clauses in the contract that will allow us to pay some fines if we switch them off more. And then the 25% increase that you are asking for is directly related to the fuel consumption of the open cycle gas turbines, which run at about a billion rand a month cost. They generate about 1,050 megawatts of electricity, and in the end of the year they would have generated about 4,000 gigawatt hours, which you would be able to sell them. Now, if you take it that the aluminium smelters at Bayside and Hillside, they consume about 1,200 megawatts at the time, and they use about 2,900 gigawatt hours in 1 month. So, what number is the 12 billion rand we are paying to run those open cycle gas turbines is 2 months worth of electricity we would supply to the smelters. So one must, you know, collect apples with apples and then get to a point where we decide, you know, is it worth it? But I would like to hear your comment on that. And then, it looks like when you are talking about municipal debt, and you are saying that the municipalities, 20 top defaulting municipalities, owe you about 4 billion rand. But then you don't look at the rest of the places that Eskom supply directly. Those are international clients, and those are Soweto, and they owe more, only Soweto owes more at the moment than what all the municipalities owe together. So are you focusing on that, and what are you doing to address that debt? Do you have things in place to make sure that you actually get that payback? And, I will keep that there for now. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable Member, and to you.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'm a little bit surprised at the tone of the meeting this morning. If we have to be the new acting chief executive, or I just track off the titles that are currently in use at Eskom because they change so quickly, but whoever's in charge, you know, we're getting this very idyllic picture of life at Eskom, which is for me a very hard to swallow considering that we've had to suspend senior executives, that the minister herself is on record as saying that Eskom does not communicate with the war room, does not communicate with her, and the reason that she had to previously remove members of the board was because of this lack of communication that is on record. So when we get shown a graph, which is happening, HR can understand, and we get figures like 94% we're always on, 96% we're always on, where the acting or the board is currently being disingenuous is that 4% or 6% outage is costing the economy between 1% to 1.5% of GDP per annum. That is the real cost of what we're talking about. So when you save on for 96% of the time, that's great. But what is the impact on jobs? What is the impact on business? And it's significant. If Eskom doesn't get its act right, South Africa will be stuck in a low economic growth of under 2% for the next 5 to 10 years. In that situation, we cannot address any of the social challenges that we face in this country. We will exacerbate our social challenges, we will not be able to restore unemployed, and all of the problems that our country faces will be worsened. So I'd like the board to really be honest about the scope of the problem that we face. It's significant. Let's not pretend that it is not significant. I'd like to ask the board specifically, it seems like there's a lot of parts in the back. Specifically, I see we highlighted in the executive summary, delays in the new bills have probably been caused by our contractors who strike a non-technical performance. Now, we know for a fact that Eskom's project management of the bold new bill program has been a disaster. We know that Eskom has not contributed sufficiently to actually project managing projects effectively, and one of the major reasons of the cost overrun. According to this, though, it's just the contractor's fault. The contractors work for someone. That will be coordinated by someone. That someone is Eskom. So the contractors are not performing because Eskom is not performing. The board needs to acknowledge that Eskom is not performing. Not just pass the buck and say it's the contractors that are the problem. Eskom is the problem.
Are we done on
the I'd also like to understand how Eskom sees itself going forward with regards to the continued electrification program within South Africa. The Bison program obviously is funded by the cost of energy, so it's important that we connect people to the grid. But Eskom gets its target awards, supposedly requested 25% tariff increase per annum for the next 2 years. This will take us on an electricity pricing path that will essentially mean that poor people can't afford electricity in South Africa. So my question is, what is the point of connecting people if they're not going to afford to pay the electricity that you're connecting them to? So we have to subsequently ask ourselves around how are we going to manage this pricing path, how is Eskom going to better manage itself and become more efficient, so that there's downward pressure on electricity pricing, so that poor people can actually enjoy the benefits of electricity that they've been connected to. At the current pricing path, Eskom wants to get up to about 89 cents per kilowatt hour 2017-2018. This will destroy business and will mean that poor people really will not be able to access electricity services in this country. They won't be able to afford it, and the only way to do it will be through legal conditions. So I wonder, when Eskom talks about its financial position, and I see that it has 200 billion rand facilities available to some of its various issues, why then is it trying to force the consumer to carry it back for its failure? We have to ask the question quite significantly, why can't Eskom reorganize, join those loans, and make sure that the tariff burden on consumers is less? We'd also like to understand how much longer it will take to convert these open gas turbines. Obviously, the cost of diesel in South Africa is significant. It's running at 2.1 billion for the quarter, and it's likely more than a budget of 2 billion for a year. So that is one of the major contributors to black coal in the Eskom balance sheet. And we'd like to see far more urgency in addressing this issue. And frankly, I haven't seen anything in this report which really placates me or kind of gives me a sense that this is going to be resolved. We're told that we only need an additional 3,000 megawatts to deal with our load shedding issues. 3,000 megawatts is not a big ask. We can build that within 18 to 24 months. I'm wondering why Eskom is talking of load shedding for another 3 to 5 years as the executive summary of the backlog. So, Chair, I can't say that this report inspires confidence. I find it incredibly underwhelming, and I actually mandate that I actually find the Eskom attitude towards this committee and the public quite insulting.
Who's next?
Yes, thank you very much, Chair. You know, we united when the Deputy President initiated the war room to try and find solutions to the challenges that are facing Eskom. In fact, it went to a point where I even punched my fist in the air, saying I'm not that. And I actually realized that at some point the board members took that literally, thinking that they can actually fight among themselves. So we are hoping that Dr. Mbane, you're going to sort it out in the leadership, including the executive, because South Africa needs a stable Eskom. The issue I want to find out is the chairperson, rather the chief executive officer, said something about maintenance. Even a slide that showed maintenance that we do have the capacity for the maintenance network. That tells me one thing, that apart from waiting for, for our power stations to come online and so on,
it means part of the problem is financial resources. If we can have a concrete plan and maintenance, and what it also represents, apart from focusing on projects that still need to be synchronized, to actually budgetize the budget about the scale of the maintenance problem and how long it would take to actually resolve it, because that is just a short-term solution. The other question, I want to weigh in on what my colleague from the Democratic Organization said. The issue about the burden of the tariffs is very important. When you go to rural areas, people have actually gone back to collecting firewood for energy because they cannot afford the price of electricity. I've had many instances where my constituents are actually helping people to collect firewood so that they can be able to cook their food, be able to actually have light at night and so on. It can be done in a democratic system. So it's pointless for us to actually keep connecting households and claim that as an achievement, you know, during the state of the nature test, it's actually important to afford it a day later. The other very important question is that centered around when we were at ESCOM at near Jibiranga, the power station, doing an oversight visit there, the committee. One of the executive managers presented to us, it was associated with my presentation that centered around what at the time he called a bad slave plantations model, which tends to resonate around the country, which was intended then to address some of the problems which normally end or relate to the labor stoppages that happen there. I'm surprised to see that after we're there, we're published all these things once more with a problem with the same contractor. And the impression was that that was going to solve the problem, the labor relations issues with the contractors themselves. What has happened to that? And how far is ESCOM in implementing that to ensure that the labor stoppages are okay? Thus, at the same objectives, I actually addressed a group of these grant workers with the demobilization program. Say, among the contractors themselves, there's a lot of discrimination that is taking place. No issues of around the police, around making sure that we employ local people. But most of those people were complaining about being discriminated against them because they came from other provinces to the point where they were told that Khoisans and Zulus are not allowed there. I brought to the attention of the senior executive management at ESCOM. They were going to send a letter explaining what they've done. They promised to investigate it, but nothing happened. Do you know what they did? They sent a GPS and they're referring me to a name. So I think it needs a comprehensive problem. It needs the intervention of management. It's management of the organization to provide attention for this. I think I've got the rest of my questions. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd like to just echo my colleagues and congratulate the acting chairperson and the acting CEO on their appointments. And I really just really wish all the best of luck in what is probably the toughest and most important job in South Africa at the moment, and that is keeping our lights on. Our economy depends on the light being on, small business depends on the light being on, and funding depends on the light being on. So I really, really wish you all the best in this momentous talk. I have three questions. The first one relates to the latest construction cost reform at Duke and Gosile. The initial costs were 70 to 90 billion. 5 years ago, we were told that it increased to between 170 and 190. This is a figure that we've been around for 5 years, so we need to know what the latest figure is. So what is the latest figure for costs for construction at Maduti and Gosile? My second question relates to municipal debt. In the presentation, you say that municipal debt amounts to 5 billion. In January, the debt owed by Soweto was 4 billion. And then in the report, you said the biggest municipalities that owe debt are in the Free State, Mpumalanga, and Northwest, and Soweto is not mentioned. Well, what is going on with Soweto? Have they paid back the debt, or are they just not included in the overdue debt? And then you also mentioned in the report that you've been restricted in affecting destinations. What does that mean? Who has restricted you? Where has the instruction come from? And then my third question is, how much electricity does ESCOM lose per annum due to theft? I know in the past there were campaigns about Izinyoka because, you know, there was really a lot of electricity being stolen. So what are the latest figures related to that? Thank you, Chair.
Another 30. contentment, etc. On the five-video municipal debt, I want to approach it from a different angle, etc. In the light of the move by the Treasury Department, which we fully support as the Portfolio Committee, what progress has been made in the present in terms of ensuring that what is due to the defaulting municipalities is not released and is not made exact. So I'd like to know what progress has been made in that regard. Secondly, I think when I'm putting a type of date on the issue of the suspension of the group executives and the executives, I want to know what are the terms of reference of the investigations as initiated by ESCO. Thirdly, my colleague touched a bit on coal mining contract. What is the procurement strategy in terms of acquiring coal mining contracts with the lead target of coal mines contracts coming to an end? And lastly, it's on labor relations issues. To what extent does that come with the labor relations agreement between suppliers and contractors? Let me pause here.
No problem.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My apologies for asking this, but I think my apology was turned up by the Secretary of the Committee. Also to note that the presentation, it was sent well in advance, so I managed to actually go through. That's why I can immediately relate to issues that are being discussed here. Thanks. Yeah. Mine is generally around the instability in the ESCOM. We must actually take it from history, starting from even I'll start with the then Minister Manus Gigaman during the 11, when ESCOM was faced with a number of challenges and bringing the chairperson who resigned. Part of the challenges that were there were the very same challenges that were cited with load shedding, instability, financial constraints, and all of that. Now, my point is that my understanding is that the company itself, every year they will sit down and come with plans on how are they going to deal with challenges that are facing the company and all of that. Now, with the current challenges that we are facing, it looks like the planning itself is opposite. The planning that has been happening throughout in the form of strategic sessions and all of that. We're in such a way to say that no, we're playing actually to fail because we don't see that from a 2011 date as was suggested. One of the issues that is a serious concern, like we're catalyzing a black management to say that everything that they touch, it looks like they can't make magic out of it. Because all the time we find that, well, instead of making progress, we're actually aggressive. It's a prime concept, because it's like we're able to really manage. The second issue, which I really want to ask, ESCOM is a multi-billion company, which of course own mandate is to ensure that it grows the economy, so that the people can economically benefit out of ESCOM. If I may just ask a very simple question. It's one issue that we have to understand. In terms of the procurement itself, how are we able to make sure that the very multi-million company touches the life of the people on strategic business that is run by ESCOM itself? It's a point that we need really to talk to, because we believe that at the end of everything, ESCOM must be able to live to the mandate that it has been given, particularly in areas where ESCOM is actually operating massively. Again, on the board itself and the executive, which has been some of the suspended and all of that, I want to link my input with the issue of the labor relations. You know, sometimes when people are fighting for the salaries. We know part of the issues that they face. Contributors to the delays is the price of the warehouse and all of that not being paid, the bonuses and all of that. You find that it's not easy for the executive and the board to pay them salaries that they think they are equal to the input that they are actually making to the company, and they never attribute to those increases of their salaries to the issues of economy, bankruptcy of the company and all of that. But that argument, it is seriously advanced when it is actually having to deal with issues of the workers themselves. Why when it comes to the workers, it was so hard to say that we can't afford that because that will affect this and that. I see the very serious dishonesty. Yourself is easy for you to actually do that, but the workers are demanding what they think is rightful there. That being actually says the pillar to post. Which to me, the problem that we are sitting with, you cannot only attribute them to the executive only. The reason why the board is there is to give evidence and direction to the government of the company itself so that it can be able to run their affairs according to the mandate of the ESCOM itself. I would actually say, if it was by me, Chair, I would actually say there's no point of suspending executives and all of that. I can as well say that the board itself, it seems like it is useless, but it's unable to give a proper direction for the company to run very efficiently. Because the problem can't be all about the executive. The board itself must be able to take a break, because they are responsible to give guidance. I'm looking about, I know that it might seem like it's a blanket approach. I know some of the members are new, and the element of continuity teachers been there. Some have been there for since. So that's why I'm seeing all of these things. Why ESCOM is actually allowing municipality to approve lots of debts? Why ESCOM is failing well in is failing to act well in advance to make sure that you are able to control the millions that we are talking about? We know that we are talking about municipalities which some of them are very, very much poor. They don't have a sound revenue base. So why wait for so long until ESCOM is owed such a lot of money, and then it becomes difficult even ourselves to run your own affairs because you are owed by municipalities? What is the plan? I think it's joining my colleagues around the tariffs, the price of electricity, which is going to affect, of course, the poorest negatively. I think we are going back against that we have yet through the ruling party to say that they have brought electricity. There's no point that you say that there is no electricity, government has provided electricity. But when you go to the plug on the wall, you switch on, you can't get the very same electricity. It's useless. Because you light, there's darkness. We are rolling back whatever that we have been able to attain thus far by the very same issue that we affected with of the load shedding. What is the plan of the board to protect the people that cannot afford, given the socio-economic condition? I think it's a well-known thing among the South Africans that the high rate of unemployment is affecting the poor of the poorest negatively. What is it? How is it going to protect themselves so that they are not affected by the 25% interest which will be putting in place on the come June or July? And lastly, Chairperson, what is the plan of ESCOM to deal with all of these issues that seem to be bedeviling the utility itself, the national grid? Because I think we need to respond to all of these challenges. Well, thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Members. We are going to the last Honourable Member, and Honourable Bongo requested some few more seconds to make another input.
Thank you, Chair. Just 10 seconds. I've got one point. I had the acting chair, Greg, talking about, obviously, the power
that they're getting from independent operators and so on. I know that most of the decisions to how these things are awarded are made by the Department of Energy. But what I want to find out is, do you have a policy as a home that actually ensures that even independent power producers that are located, maybe they're in your previously disadvantaged communities, let's say your former home in Valitula, are not overlooked? Because most of the projects, what I've discovered, most of the awardments are actually made to projects that are located in your previously advantaged communities. Thank you very much.
Honourable Madison.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me also congratulate the Excellency of Telecom. It's not going to be easy for him because he has inherited a part of data with several challenges that we know. But we hope for the best. Having read the presentation, because I was not here when it was presented, but fortunately we could hit very early. Amongst the challenges which were presented to us by ESCOM last year, there was an issue around the aging infrastructure. Now, I want to understand what plans in place to resolve this particular challenge, because I believe if we can have all these infrastructures in good shape, somewhere somehow we'll be able to achieve what we want to achieve. When the CEO was appointed by the minister, he made an appearance after his appointment, which was so positive, that ESCOM has coal. Now, electricity generation from coal will somehow assist us with some of the challenges we have. Now, my question to you, CEO, Mr. Prime Minister. ESCOM recently signed a 20-year contract of coal to Glencoe, overlooking Exxaro, which is a state-owned company. And my understanding of the coal which Exxaro is supplying in our country is zero grade. 100% grade is the one that they import, right? Now, how are we going to achieve this particular one of generating electricity out of coal? We are going to get a coal of quality, given all the challenges which I have raised. On your presentation, you mentioned five areas of a 5-point plan, and that to resolve critical issues at power stations, it will be through the deployment of senior managers. Now, I'm interested to know, what are these critical issues that you must resolve? And where were these managers, senior managers, before? Because it's like you have just arrived and these senior managers definitely found them there. What were they doing all along? Were they not capacitated enough or given an opportunity to resolve so-called critical issues, which I still want to hear about? On the deadline of municipalities, which is my last point, I know that ESCOM wanted to shut electricity in some of the municipalities, and there was a dramatic march which said that, oh, this will compromise ratepayers and what it is. But but we know the impact of this particular issue in terms of the finances of ESCOM, which was also presented to us as a joint committee. Is this the reason perhaps you decided to withdraw your action in shutting electricity in those municipalities? And what actions do you wish to take to ensure that these municipalities, they are paying the debt? Thank you.
Honourable members, we are running behind schedule. Honourable Frank, you are the last person.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think the board of ESCOM and the executive that is here is really listening to what the members are asking. We are all concerned about the economy of the country. My first concern would be for ESCOM not just to brush through the suspension of the then executive members. Who would want to know as this committee? Or maybe because the DG is here, maybe he should be able to help. The suspension of the executive of ESCOM, what was the reason? If it's some sort of care because they are being investigated, when are we as this committee going to get the information on the suspension, or do we depend on the media? Because the media is giving us the information. Are we going to always depend on the media? Same as the weekend papers, what the weekend papers have said. Do we want to therefore say we will take everything from the media and nothing will be given to us by the board members, including what we got over the weekend? That is my main concern. The other question, the question that I have is, at what stage of implementation is the financial package of National Treasury going to happen? The guarantee that you are given as CEO, acting CEO. Are you saying to us the transfers are not done yet? If they are done, at what stage is the implementation of this financial package? The second question, Chair, is on the credit rating of the home. How are you going to? You said you are going to you hope to change the credit rating of ESCOM. What are the key components and areas of focus for you as ESCOM to correct the credit rating decision? The issue, Chairperson, of that relates to non-core strategic assets have been pronounced or determined by the Minister of Finance. Have you already considered that? Have you already identified the non-core strategic assets or the sale of non-core strategic assets? If you have, maybe you are able to tell us which are those non-core strategic assets. If you are able to tell us, can you please tell us what are those? The last question that has been will be on the gap between the cost objective tariffs of independent power producers that are receiving versus the tariffs of ESCOM receiving from the public. What is being done to close the gap? I think that question has come out from other members, but would you please elaborate as much as possible for us to understand what is being done to close that gap? Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. I think you have a lot in your place to answer or to comment. But before that, let me also pose some few questions to you
as a citizen of this country or as a member of this committee. And before I do that, I just want to make a reflection that the sentiments which are expressed here by members are the sentiments which are being expressed by millions of South Africans out there, the concerns at ESCOM. You have a serious and a huge responsibility upon your shoulders, as I said earlier on, to make sure that this country survives out of this problem or crisis, if one can say it. I have several questions to ask. Most of them have been asked by honorable members, but I just want to ask a few which relate to governance. That the role of audit risk committee in ensuring financial stability at ESCOM, what has this committee been, what has been their role on and on? The second question is related to the contract. Somebody, one member mentioned that it looks like we are trying to shift the blame to contractors. So I just want to understand that how has the board approved contracts or the contract management? Is it in place and enforceable? We are raising this issue because we understand that if there's labor unrest, obviously the progress or the program will come to a halt. Who will take responsibility to fill the gap? Because when it comes to a halt, it means escalation of prices. It means more money must come in. And also, issue relating to suppliers as well is still related to contract management. That is it true that there are suppliers who are charging ESCOM prices way above the market prices, for instance in diesel, and also in coal? The last question in relation to governance. How does the board do oversight over the rail program? How often do you visit the construction site? We know we have executive and non-executive. We are raising these questions because it can't be business as usual. Millions of South Africans are looking upon us and yourself to provide solutions. The last set of questions is relating around operational issues at ESCOM. Does ESCOM provide a social facilitation process or processes with other partners when implementing projects? This will also relate to industrial actions, deliver answers. There was a collapse of the Majuba power station. Can we be provided with a progress? The last one will relate to the diesel supply as well. That Petrol SA, are we having a relationship or contract with Petrol SA? And then if not, why? Because we believe some of these high prices which are charged by a middleman, 10 billion to allow ESCOM to save some few rents to do maintenance or other operational issues as a utility. I will now allow the chairperson through you for members of the board to interact with what honorable members have raised here. Thank you.
terms of using the specific issues, some of the issues are very specific and relate to various group executives present here today.
Thank you, Chair. The first question was about how long load shedding will continue. As I indicated, we will need to source about 3,000 megawatts of electricity to allow ourselves to do maintenance without load shedding. It is quite easy that tomorrow we can suspend all maintenance and there will not be any issue. That one could save South African economy, and that would be an important decision. So we will be looking at how we can source the additional electricity that will give us headspace to allow us to do maintenance. And it will depend on how long it takes us to source the additional electricity. It is my hope that we can somehow find the 3,000 megawatts at least by the end of this year.
On that one, let me interrupt you. What needs to be done if maybe we can ask this in that issue?
We will need to come back to you, Chair, because we need to sit down and look at the possibilities that exist. It is a question of where we can get it and at what price, and therefore how much money is required and do we have the money. But let us go back as a team and look at the possibilities that exist. As I said, there are IPPs. We can accelerate certain parts of the build program so that we can get capacity earlier. We can bring in budgets. And so on and so forth. So there's quite a number of things that we can do, but we need a plan that says what is it that can give us cost-effective 3,000 megawatts to allow us to do maintenance without pushing. On the issue of suspensions, maybe I should ask the DG or the chairperson, because the questions were quite numerous. My understanding is that the investigators have been appointed and we're waiting for their report. And depending when the report is available, that we can have a clearer picture of what transpired prior to suspension. Chair, the next question was, is money a problem? And do we have capacity to deal with maintenance? I think, Chair, we will need a financial plan to ensure that we have the money that's required to maintain. It is quite possible that if we all understand what needs to be done, we can raise the money. We would also have to look at the balance between tariffs and debt, because if the feeling is that we should not increase tariffs, then we would have to borrow the money to do the maintenance and to do the capital build. And so the question becomes, to what extent would we have appetite to see Eskom's gearing increase? And it's a function of to what extent can we allow the gearing of Eskom to deteriorate, given the fact that we're already classified as non-investment grade by the rating agencies. So we would have to balance the health of the balance sheet by whether we eat further with debt or whether we increase tariffs to pay for our consumption of electricity. There was a question about the fact that there may have been fingers in the cookie jar. Unfortunately, the question did not have sufficient detail for us to act on it. And I would appeal that if there is specific detail, if you ask for the number. Eskom has a toll-free number where you can report anonymously any problems that, or any information that anybody may have on activities that are illegal.
other members, either provide us with information, the specific information which we can ask, we can take it to, or you can call the crime line, which is 0800-11-2722. So we will deal with the matter when we have the information. On the issue of maintenance.
Sorry, Judge, I just wondered if you would allow a follow-up question later on the answers that you've given.
Yeah, that's not interrupting.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
On the issue of maintenance delinquency, there have been a lot has been said about maintenance delinquency. Escort is accused of having been delinquent in not building more power stations and not maintaining power stations. At the same time, Escort has said, we have been asking for money to do so. We have not had the necessary parasympathies or transfers from the treasury over a long period of time, and that is why we have maintenance backlog. The way that I see Chapter 7 is that it is built in them, it's not going to leave us any further. We are in the situation that we are in at the moment. We have to do maintenance, we have to look forward, we have to build the power stations that are necessary to take us into the future, and we have to maintain to ensure that we look after the power stations that we have. This question was asked in different ways. And so the question about what are the intended results of the bill program and what is the board done? And this question was asked several times but phrased differently. And Chair, I was privileged to sit in a meeting which was chaired by one of our board members on Monday morning, Mr. Penneko, who was holding the executives over the calls about the bill program and what is being done. And perhaps Mr. Penneko can at this point just comment about what is the board doing to supervise and oversee the bill program.
Chairman and members, thank you. I'll share with you a little bit of our workings on Monday, and this was under the board committee of recovery effort, and under the build part of the agenda. We looked very closely at the three big build projects, the two people see the Ebola. And we had already started this consultation at the time as we commenced our duty at the board. And the executives had prepared accordingly and responded to our call to have a discussion as of Monday this week for us to lock down time, cost and quality in terms of the build projects. We understand the history and the strategy is how can we claw back, those are the words, how can we claw back in terms of the history and how can we enhance the productivity going forward. So we just sent through a link in the ground, we said, let's lock down at this point. And we got lockdown details from Madupi in terms of time, cost and quality, Hoxina and Tulkula. And when I received that feedback from the executives, I said to both members, the committee members or non-executive directors and the officials, I am feeling comfortable that at least we've got this on table. Our big task will now commence in terms of recovery, growth and productive enhancements. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair, there was that question on board constitution, whether the board is properly constituted. During the conference, I just want to comment, but as far as I can see, it is properly constituted. We have board members, we have board subcommittees, and the board members have been affiliated to subcommittees with chairperons, and the subcommittees meet as Mr. Penneko was indicating that his committee met on Monday. So we have a properly constituted board, unless the company secretary has a different view, because say not an expression. Very independent.
Thank you, Chairperson. I can confirm to the committee that the board is properly constituted and it functions in a very robust manner. We actually have more than the normal number of meetings for an ordinary company. This is due to the situation in which we find ourselves. Committees meet on a regular basis. There are many special meetings which are held to deal with issues as and when they arise. In terms of the skill set, board members are, I believe, adequately suited to attend to the requirements of the company. There are vacancies on the board, and I think these are being in the process of being filled. The DPE can give more information on that aspect. But in terms of the workings of the board, we're comfortable that things are under control.
Thank you. Chair, I had the privilege of attending my first board meeting on Sunday, which had been planned long before I was appointed, which started at 10 o'clock on Sunday morning and went on until about 5, chair managers. Conflict of interest of members and the average number of companies or board members are servicing. This is also a question for the company secretary, but as far as I could determine, there is a policy on the management of the conflict of interest, and I believe that members have had to make declarations in line with company policy, but it is a matter that also is in the view of the company.
Okay, Chair, I can confirm that we have in place 5 declarations of interest by each of the board members, on 5 our office, and we do monitor conflict of interest on an ongoing basis. We have a system of proxy checks for transactions above 300 million rand, where proxy checks are conducted not only on board members, but also on their spouses and or partners. So we do have an active system of trying to ascertain that no conflicts exist, and where they do, provide an appropriate action.
Chair, I wish to respectfully disagree with the Shadow Minister of Public Enterprises when she says load shedding is normal. I think what is normal in South Africa is that we have light electricity more often than we have load shedding, and that is a fact. It is an indisputable fact, unless if perhaps the Shadow Minister made a mistake and was referring to a country which is in darkness 22 hours out of 24 hours every day. We agree that for some part of the day, in certain parts of the country, there is no electricity due to maintenance, but generally we have lights. In South Africa, so I would disagree that load shedding is normal. They are periodic interruptions, and there's been a pain to explain that these periodic interruptions are not because we do not have the necessary capacity to provide electricity. Periodic interruptions are necessitated by the need to catch up with maintenance. Later on, there was a question. Somebody is very emotional about the fact that these interruptions and load shedding are costing the economy about 1.5% of GDP. Well, sorry? Come again? It's something to be emotional about. Sorry, I forget the name and shadow title of the speaker, but if that makes you emotional, I wonder what will happen to you when you do not do maintenance. Because if you do not do maintenance, the cost of the economy won't be 1.5% of GDP. It will be 100 times more. So you need to do maintenance.
Honourable Member, let's allow him to answer. Don't interact.
If I may, the speaker is misrepresenting my point, and that's why I'm...
You will clarify when we come to the issue. Thank you.
First bonuses to escrow facilities are concerned, Chair. My information is that bonuses were paid in the last 2 years to escrow facilities, but I can get the HR executive to confirm that.
Thank you, Chair. We do have a performance scheme. contracts are not met, the bonuses are not paid out. For the executive, the fee has been exceeded for the past 2 years. We haven't paid out a bonus. With regards to the issue that was raised on the issue around the wage bill, if you look at the annual increases for the managerial level, they're also differentiated. And over time, we have also made sure we were within GDP around it.
Thank you. But Eskom has a robust policy of when, how bonuses are paid. And as far as I could determine, there is no record of deviation from existing company policy on where and how bonuses are paid. And this policy is a board policy and in line with good governance. On the question of the war room communication, the war room meets at Friday. Eskom has been attending the meetings, in fact, our representative there. The Eskom delegation has been led by Mr. Louis Maleka, and I would like to ask him to talk about what happened at the war room.
Thank you, Chair and CEO. The structure of the war room, which is led by government, and Eskom is an active participant in the war room, focusing on the 5-point plan that were approved by Cabinet on the 10th of December. Mainly is to look at issues of collaboration, quick decision making, and opportunities, which were earlier on stated regarding how do we help in terms of supply and demand options. The meetings in the technical committee are meeting on Fridays from 7:30 to 10:30 at the union buildings. And our CEO and CFO are standing members. And we've got EGs from various departments, including National Treasury, CP and DOE as key committee members. And once a month we meet at the INC, chaired by the Deputy President. And there we give feedback on the progress of the 5-point plan. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. The question of municipal debt was also asked several times in this response. Chair, the issue here is that we've got people that pay electricity and the municipalities. Perhaps some people don't pay regularly, but the money is paid over to the municipalities, which is opposed to the debt paid over to Eskom. The money is not paid over by the municipalities to Eskom. Whether it has been collected or not collected, the municipalities end up owing Eskom. This debt is increasing. The talk of 20 municipalities that are the VAT defaulters in this respect, there has been talk of shutting down or cutting off electricity to these municipalities. My advice to the board, and I say this without proper consultation or mandate, but it's a view that I personally hold very strongly. And then I plan to canvass with government as well as the board and the regulator, is that Eskom should bypass the municipalities and provide electricity directly to the residents on a prepaid basis. In that way, we do not have to shut down any household that is paying electricity. However, as I say, it is a matter that will require to be discussed by the board, discussed with the regulator, and discussed with the municipalities. But that's what I feel. If I was to express my view on the matter, that we should bypass these municipalities. In that way, we do not have to cut electricity to these municipalities, especially to the ratepayers or the users of electricity that are paying on a regular basis. So Eskom should unplug the line from the municipality, put it directly into the houses of those households, and put in prepaid meters. And in that way, we will stop the increase of the debt, firstly. And secondly, we will get the benefit of prepaid electricity, because what happens with prepaid electricity is that we are able to prepaid electricity allows us to improve our cash flow and balance sheet situation. In fact, in the long term, I think the whole of South Africa must move to prepaid electricity. In that way, we will be able to fund Eskom upfront and deal with the cash flow issues if everybody pays for their electricity upfront without having to go to the capital market. And perhaps if we can all move to prepaid electricity, we might be able to be asking for lower tariff increases because of the cash requirements of Eskom will be taken care of upfront. There was a question about winter demand. Yes, demand will increase in winter.
Samsobole is GF generation, there will be increases, there will be stress on the grades over winter. The choices that concerns us are to slow down maintenance during winter to allow for increased demand, but I think also to intensify the program to educate South Africans about the need to switch off utensils that are not in use and to manage electricity effectively. So we'll talk about the challenges of winter.
Thank you, CE, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. The winter comes with its different problems and different opportunities. One of them is that in winter, because of the low temperatures, some of our load losses, like the vacuum losses due to high ambient temperatures, those losses disappear, and therefore we actually find that the availability of our machines improves in winter. And also the lower temperature goes very well with the machines. So we normally get a higher reliability and performance of the machines. Two, in terms of our maintenance plan, we try to have less maintenance in winter so that more machines are available to meet the peak. And then lastly, the peak or the profile of the load in winter is lower during the day and peaks in the morning and also peaks in the evening. And therefore, the challenge of us not meeting the demand gets limited to a few hours in the evening and a few hours in the morning. But we are doing everything and we are busy with that planning now on how we're going to approach this winter. Thank you, John.
And there was a question by the, I think it was Shadow Minister of Public Enterprises, that why did Eskom simulate a...
I'm sorry, CE, to interrupt you. I think it's wrong to extend that they're not going to do the language of Parliament, Shadow Ministers. What is that?
No,
I don't want
to say that. That's not.
Remember, Shadow Ministers is wrong.
But it's allowed, so that order is not really helping the situation. And we are behind schedule, by the way.
So I don't know what that means, the Minister of Public Enterprises. So the need to simulate a disaster. Why there was a need to simulate the disaster? Honorable Mazzoni would know that in risk management, disaster recovery simulations are quite critical. In fact, this country should worry if Eskom is not thinking about disaster recovery simulations. The fact that there was a drill to simulate the disaster does not mean that Eskom was planning for disaster. Everywhere in companies with operations such as Eskom, people simulate disasters, they simulate fire drills. It does not mean that anybody is planning to commit the act of arson. That's because the management and risk managers have said it's not a fire drill. So that is quite normal. And in fact, even during the best of times, that practice should continue. Even when we do not have load shedding, even when we do not have that maintenance backlog, even when we are comfortable that we can supply electricity as we are to meet demand, the risk management should remain a critical part of our management activity. It is something that we will continue to simulate all sorts of disasters and have contingency plans to manage all sorts of risk scenarios that we can take. There was a question about why the creditors have not qualified the financials of the school. Sorry, not the creditors, the auditors have not. We have external auditors who are members of a profession
that ensures that they act independently at all times, and that they only respond to the hard evidence that is put before them. And so their decision to qualify or not to qualify financials, I would imagine, is informed by their professional ethics and conduct. And so the fact that they have found it not necessary to qualify the financials of ECOM satisfy us here models that in fact there's nothing to worry about. Perhaps in the future they will, but certainly the fact that they have not qualified the financials is not true. I do not think it's a matter to worry about, because that decision not to qualify was made by reputable auditing firms who are independent as is a requirement in their profession. On the issue of the contracts with aluminium centers, I will ask Microsoft to talk about it, but I sent him in fact on Saturday morning a whole money, because it was in fact the first thing when I arrived at ESCOM that I personally said. I said, if you need 3,000 megawatts to do maintenance without load shedding, why don't we just shut down the elements, because they consume about 2,000 watts. And then I realized how sometimes things can look very simplistic, because in fact he showed me that we need the smelters to manage electricity and motion, because they are in fact the first people that get shut down. But we can shut down them down for a period of time before their product solidifies in the pots, and we have to put them back on. But they provide us the steady, if you like, load shedding capability. Because we generate electricity, and when we need it, we take it away from them. But maybe mine can explain it more elegantly, because it's an engineer.
Thank you, CE. Honorable Chair, honorable members, I think to start off the answer with BSP, we could start firstly and foremost with the emotional aspect with regard to the price. It is generally quoted as a price-related contract. It is not. The VSP contract is a revenue contract over a long period of time, hedged against the price of aluminium and dollars. ESCOM is exposed to dollars and aluminium in price, and consequently it juxtaposes or opposes that risk by structuring it, and that was the rationale for the VSP contract, to basically hedge ESCOM's risk in aluminium, which it is a large consumer of, and also dollars, which is highly exposed to as a result of the build program. So the only way you can judge the BSP contract is to look at the contract over the long term on this kind of cash flow basis. Such as that was done up until the end of 2008, and the contract broke even. And I think we should review that from time to time to answer the question, not against the so-called price at a particular time, which is somewhat meaningless. The second question, as a result of the large amount of power that is consumed, as the CE mentioned, one has to consider the participation of BHP in avoiding load shedding. Now, it's true that the contract says that load shedding will be limited to a certain maximum period of time per shed and a number of sheds per week. There's a reason for that. If those pots are shut down for a lengthy period of time, and it's only a few hours, they freeze. And to restart that smelter will literally take months if ever able to be restarted. However, they are able to shut down instantaneously if called upon to do so. So there are two scenarios I just quickly wanted to give you, actual scenarios where those pots are holding, which protect the system. Firstly, we can lose Kabulbaka instantaneously, which is 1,500 megawatts. We have not a single machine in ESCOM that can respond that quickly, and therefore we switch the smelters or simultaneously at the same time, and so stabilize the system. We had an instance where one of our power stations developed a multiple fault, which put the whole power station down. To react to that, we switched the smelters off. So I put you, Chair, that even if BHP was switched off tomorrow, we'd have to even buy a switch of 1,500 megawatts to replace it with. And that is the reason you have to look at these things in context. I thank you.
Thank you. Chair, the next question, the issue of GDPR, I think we've dealt with it. Let's just say the cost of ongoing maintenance. I think, as the board member once said, would be two gadgets on the plane. Then there has been an allegation that ESCOM's project management has been disastrous. I would ask the chair that we even call the department heads that pointed to this assertion, and on the basis of the evidence, we will be able to deal with the inadequacies of ESCOM. To deal with the statements like the ESCOM's management has been, project management has been disastrous, is unfortunately not adequate enough for us to investigate anything or to take action against anything, but with like constructive set of facts and evidence that will show that ESCOM's project management has been disastrous. It doesn't help that in a situation like this, we all jump up and down and shout, disaster, 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 and cry wolf. We need evidence, and both is passionate thing. Chair, and then there was the issue of why, if we have the facilities, low facilities that we have that have not been torn down, why are we asking for tariffs? First of the matter is, the choice that we need to make as a country. We can allow the general issue that the sent to ADA, which is, has been stable over the last 4 years at about 55%, to deteriorate, which reduces our chances of ever getting an investment grade, or we can ask for tariff increases. It is a choice that we need to make. So if the feeling of Parliament is allow ESCOM to get an issue to go to 100%, perhaps it would appear to me that it is more prudent that we pay for our consumption rather than borrow to pay for consumption. I would agree with the suggestion that there is a need to synchronize and coordinate ESCOM's maintenance plan. In fact, we're having this discussion with Mr. Sobodin. Now I can't remember if it was Sunday or Monday, or the last 3 days have been like the roller coaster. But the fact that we need to stop and think about our maintenance and start the maintenance in areas that give us maximum benefit rather than just go out and do maintenance. So we need areas that will give us maximum benefit from maintenance and in fact that will give us more power. And start with those rather than just do everything and when it arrives. It's a discussion that we've had, but obviously it was just a discussion that we had in the corridor. I don't know if you want to talk about that.
So you see, Honorable Chair, but maybe just to mention that we do have a robust maintenance plan which is available, and we've been sharing it in a lot of places, where we've got a scope of work of what we need to do, at what intervals, when, and then the detailed work instruction of when you take that maintenance, what you need to do. The issue, as the CEO have said, is getting that space and also prioritizing in terms of what will give you best parts for your, you know, best returns for your banks. And that program will continuously optimize and schedule.
And then there was a statement made, I don't know if it was a question or a statement, that what is the point of connecting people if they cannot afford electricity? I think the point of connecting people if they cannot afford electricity is exactly what was said today here, that they will go to firewood, which is more expensive than the fact that they cannot pay for electricity. So somehow, I think we have to accept that as a developmental state and as a developing country, we have to take a decision that poor people are better off with electricity than without. Statements like, what is the point of connecting people if they cannot afford electricity, are not statements that should be made in a developing country. You remember that in the United States,
beneficial to electrify 100% of the United States was made by the President Rosenthal after he had been gone to a farm to recuperate and suddenly discovered that in that rural farm there is no electricity. And when he recovered and went back to Washington, he said, the United States shall be 100% electrified. And it was a government decision, irrespective of level of class in society or level of wealth that people had and affordability to the decision that was made. I think that our attitude towards the electrification of South Africa is similar. We would need to deal with the issue of affordability and tariffs and debt versus equity as we go along, but the principle must be even the poorest must receive electricity. Chair, then the questions were related to the issue of contractors and labor at the BNC, as well as the initial cost which was increased and what the latest cost is. I will ask Abraham Masango to deal with that question.
Thank you, Chief, Chair, and members. First, I want to deal with the issue of labor unrest, particularly at M2P. Just to go back, which you recall that in 2013, ESCOM did a deep dive in terms of the labor issues in this program, in this project. Subsequent to that, we came up with the partnership agreement. Now, within that partnership agreement framework, it stipulates very clear in terms of what is expected from our contractors and what is expected from our unions. One of the biggest challenges we are faced with, particularly at M2P, we are realizing that the people that are working at M2P, particularly the contractors and the unions, they choose not to operate within that framework. Now, what ESCOM has done has decided that we will hold contractors accountable in terms of making sure that they operate within the framework that has been agreed. And there's also an expectation that everyone that is a signatory to that agreement must comply to that framework. And it is our view that if all the parties comply to that, we will have stability and peace within these projects. In some of our projects, we've seen that the issue of complying is satisfactory, hence we have less or no labor instability. So currently what we're doing, we're making sure that we hold them accountable to manage their employees as well by complying to that agreement. But over and above that, the recent strike that we have, it has compelled us to institute a deep dive into the entire labor unrest at M2P, which we hope that once the current issues are resolved, we will be able to get more details in terms of why people or contractors are not complying together with their workers to the agreement. Right now, as we speak, Chair, the contractors are talking to their employees and told that they are following the traffic to resolve their matters. We hope that very soon those issues will be resolved and then they will get back to work.
Mr. Sango refers to the recent strike that we have, Chair. My understanding is that it's the recent strike that the private sector contractors contracted by ESCOM have, and not ESCOM itself, because our employees are not on strike. And I think his answer also answers the issue of social facilitation process with investors with respect to industrial action. With respect to inability in ESCO, Chair.
Sorry, Chair. The CEO asked Mr. Sorry, I forget his name, to also offer the question about the cost overruns that Mr. Pierre was seeing, and he hasn't asked that.
Are you going to address that?
Yeah, I was hoping that through our CFO, that question will be addressed. From the project perspective, as you know, that there are approved business cases on this project right now. And I'm speaking right now, we are still executing these projects within those business cases that were approved. However, as part of the project management, we do identify the risk involved in this project and try and mitigate it. And we also, you know, cost quantify those risks. And then we also bring it to the attention of our executives and the board, and we try and mitigate it. Right now, as we speak, we still execute within the business case that we have approved. If I were to specific at the UP, there was a business case that was approved at 105 billion. We're still executing within that. As we see that the business case was approved at 118.5 billion. We're still executing within those business cases. However, we do not forget the fact that we have to improve our efficiencies so that that becomes part of mitigating the risk. One of the biggest challenges is that, for example, if a project is on strike like Medupi right now, obviously you incur a bit of delays, but because the contracts are accountable in terms of the contract that we place.
Chair, then the next question was about the stability, leadership, as well as the mandate, ability of the leadership of ESCOM to execute the mandate of ESCOM. I was to assure this committee that having been appointed a chief executive, I'm quite happy that we do have an executive in place in every single portfolio. Some of them are acting, we will address the matter as a member of the agency. Some of them are not. They have been in their positions for quite a while. They are a group of highly competent and skilled people. And I'm quite sure that with this team that we have in front of you, we are able to execute the mandate of ESCOM. We have had an initial discussion, a whole discussion, and certainly with the executive about our attitude towards the problem. We have decided to become very positive, to tell our story without fear, and to do what we think is correct and necessary to do to ensure that South Africa continues to have electricity. And that is what we have agreed to do. We will be breaking away to do a detailed strategic plan of how and we are going to execute this mandate. But Chair, my assessment also is that we will be able to meet the electricity demand of this country, of South Africa. The issue of labor relations and executives and the disparity between what executives earn, causing workers to demand what is actually theirs, as I've been able to explain this morning, is that that is not between ESCOM executives and ESCOM employees. It is a matter, I think the person was asking the question, actually ask the question that the workers are actually demanding what is rightfully theirs. I wish to point out that this contradiction that exists at the moment, the demand for higher salaries, for bonuses, and so on and so forth, is in fact a matter between our private sector contractor and the labor unions. It is a matter in which we're trying to make sure that there's peace, and that there is progress, and that our projects can be executed. But largely, the delays in the execution of Kusile and Medupi have been due to the work stoppages that have occurred every year in the last 5 years amongst the employees of our private contractors. There was a question about what we are doing to ensure that the IPPs, independent power producers, are not overlooked in what we do, and I will ask Calvin to talk.
Thank you, Chief Executive, Honorable Chairman, Honorable Member. Honorable Member was correct. These programs are normally managed by the Department of Energy. We work very closely with them, but I am not aware of any procedure on our side, I would say, especially that the IPPs and those projects be cited in most of the term poor area. Unfortunately, the citing of those projects is predominantly driven by geographical issues, depending where it is, maximum sunlight and wind.
And I will go back because we are part of the steering committee with the ICC officers to ensure that your point is taken through and that we do feed that energy from the IPPs and build the grid network into the area that are most well developed.
Yeah, there was a question about why the 20-year Glencore deal over SRO was entered into. As I last more years to talk about the process that that was followed in arriving at that contract.
Unfortunately, I don't have the details of those two actual contracts. What I can just talk to is the fact that when we design a new power station, we also look at the quality of the comms and design the robustness of your boilers and your machines to be able to take that comms. You'd also know that in South Africa, we've got power stations that actually burn one of the poorest coals, you know, in the world. Is because of the way we designed the machine. So irrespective of who the supplier is, the specification of the available coal would be taken into context when you actually design those machines, and those machines will be able to. And of course, it's a trade-off between the price of good coal and poor coal and the performance of the station, and we do those engineering studies.
Chair, then there was a question on the five-year plan and the deployment of senior measures and the critical areas that the five-year plan talks to. I will ask Mr. Maleka to deal with the five-year plan.
Thank you very much, Chair. As earlier on stated, that the five-year plan really revolved around supply and demand issues. And from the supply side of things, we identify generation maintenance operational efficiencies as one key element of the five-point plan. In there, ESCOM and government are working on what else can we do over and above what ESCOM is doing to procure as well as to monitor and look at all other options that are available in the country as far as augmenting the shortage of supply. Which talks to the 3,000 that the CEO spoke about earlier on. And maintenance can only be effective if we have enough airspace to do the work. And that's the work of the war room in terms of that. And there is also, in the background plan, a core generation, which means that we have IPPs, independent IPPs, that are coming in with their generators, and they are setting to the organization to top up our capacity. In the carbon plan, there is a gas to power or gas for power generation, exploring the gas opportunities for the country. And we are in a short, medium term, long term type of options within the war room. Then the fourth one is your other independent power producers, and this is a DOE-driven process. And the last one is demand side management. Under demand side management, there was an earlier question that was asked, what can we do to assist? The simplest thing that South Africans can start doing now is to really switch off the areas where we are not using electricity. And that's part of the energy efficiencies. We're looking at CFLs, which is your bulbs and so forth, and there's other projects, bigger projects that the teams are looking at within the war room. So those are essentially the five-point plan that we are monitoring and also working with all government departments to ensure that we put up the supply and demand options. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, then there was a question about the money from the Treasury. As I indicated earlier, my understanding is that it will be transferred during this financial year, but Ms. Lady, who is the only Italian in ESCO, can explain when the money is coming.
Yes, thank you, Chief Executive, Honorable Chair and members. The 23 billion that we is injection from the National Treasury is expected in basically two tranches. One is expected now in June and another before the end of the financial year.
And then there was a question of how are we going to get back our investment credit rating. As I said earlier, Chair, the strategy really, the only thing that we can do is to go back to the rating agencies and ask them what it is that we need to do to get back our credit rating and write down everything that they say meticulously and come back and make sure that everything that they say we need to do, we do as a country, as ESCOM. and I'm quite confident that if after a period of time, perhaps a year, we go back to them and say, this is the list that you gave to us, this is what we have done, what else do we need to do? And if they tell us, there's still other things that we need to do, go back and do them, until the day that we go back to them and they say, okay, you have done everything that needs to be done, you can get back into credit rating. So I think that is the best way. I think it will be counterproductive for us to second guess what it is that they want for us to get our investment credit rating back. So we will ask them. We intend to have a meeting with them and talk to them about what it is that we need to get back our credit rating back. And whatever they put on that list, we as this ESCO and the board can give you an assurance, Chair, that we will pursue every single one of those tasks very diligently until we get the credit rating back. The non-core assets that need to be sold, they have been non-core assets that have been identified as have a potential to be sold. However, I think we need to review as to whether from the pragmatic or from the material positions that confront us at the moment, whether these are decisions that we may need to review or to take. We will be re-looking at the assets that have been identified as non-core and deciding whether or not they still need to be sold. But as I say, that will be informed not by DOPA, but by the material conditions confronting us now. There is at least one asset, however, where I think there is no debate, and that is the issue of the home loan book. I think that if we can agree with labor, that one can go. There is a potential of about 7 billion in there that we can dispose as a matter of agency. In fact, the board were asking over the weekend what happened to the sale of the home loan book. And that one, it is not core because making loans for homes is not the core business of Transnet. There are institutions, those core businesses. But as far as the others, I would rather not Transnet sold its home loan book some time ago, it is a decision that it does not regret. We will have to look at the other macro assets that have been identified. I think Mr. Bimadega talked about ITPs, and the other question was, how is the audit, board audit risk committee working, and is it effective? Chairperson of the audit board, audit and risk committee is Ms. Tonsa Mabuta, and then she will comment on that.
Thank you, honorable members. Audit and risk committee is working hard with the management as well to make sure that they do a lot of studying through the business productivity program that has been implemented by ESCOM board, make sure that we look at every aspect of each income statement and balance sheet line item to look at opportunities where we can decrease expenses and shift some of the projects that can be done later to make sure that we give this crisis period a lot of attention and we get money that we can use to fund all the projects and maintenance that is being done currently. We managed to save a lot of money through the business productivity program, and those savings are then used to do all the projects that we're doing. The acting FD will give us more details on the ultra figures that we managed to save then. We managed as well through the IFC we've raised bonds this year and we raised about two tranches last year, bringing money to FCE to give more details on the, the FCE to give more details on the amount that you managed to give on the program, the Lesser Activity Program.
Thanks, PE, and again, Honorable Chair and members. Yes, ESCOM is actually driving a program to actually make sure that we actually run the business more efficiently. And I think some of the things that the PE is mentioning on the looking at the non-core assets and seeing if we can sell them is part of that to make sure that we actually run with only the core that we need. But also on the operating expenditure, we have been running this program for almost a year now, in the last financial year. And in fact, if you look at the information that we have distributed and you look at the income statement of ESCOM, because the program had started last year, you will note that the operating expenses have not grown with inflation, which is already an indication of how we've driven the process of reducing costs in the organization, where you have expected probably an inflationary growth. But we are driving the program, and I think for the past year we have managed to save more than 8 billion rand, which has been used to support other initiatives in the business as well.
Thank you, Acting CFO. The contract management and the issue of suppliers charging above market prices, the procurement practices at ESCOM are overseen by a board subcommittee, which is chaired by Nazia Karim, and I will ask you to just comment on how the committee keeps management accountable.
Morning to the Honourable Chair and the rest of the members. From the subcommittee of board chair, we comprise of four of us, and basically we delegated to deal with all matters that are above a certain threshold. And when the matters come home to us, obviously there are certain aspects that need to be taken into account, which we follow protocols to see that obviously that those things are obviously solid and in line with all the legal implications from ESCOM side. Obviously I'm concerned about certain people that are benefiting from certain tenders that have been put out, and obviously we are addressing that. We do the property checks, we do check up, we do concern, we do, and if there is concern, we do send back. Obviously also in terms of financial implications, there were certain methods where we are in line check with what is in ESCOM's is in line with ESCOM's what is mandated to us, what is in line with all the principles, and we do follow these principles. And before anything actually goes out, we as the board, we take it to board and the final decision is also made, our recommendation obviously, and obviously with other subcommittees that are interrelated to addressing the certain issues that do come to board tender. So from outside, we are in line with all the principles and obviously implementing further principles that will obviously all other members, what are their concerns at last. Thank you.
I would just like to add, members, that any proposal that comes in through the tender process, before it's finalized, there are independent auditors. They come in and follow the whole paper trail and do the recommendation. There's no decision taken without that probity check and that assurance by independent auditors.
Chair, then the question 66 was about oversight over the build program, but I think Mr. Pettine will tell this is unless Mr. Pettine wants to add.
Thank you, Chair. We covered the detailed feedback on the grouping seal and pull up. What we've also added, Honorable Chair and members, to the build program is the project of the large scale electrification that is on contract with us and the Ministry of Energy. And we're going to keep focus on that. There's some 3.5 million customers that's on the project plan today. Thank you.
Chair, 67 is about social facilitation. I think that we have dealt with it. about the local project agreement that was signed with Consider Mutube. And number 58, I will ask Mr. Abraham Masang to talk about the collapse of the collapse that happened in Majuba last year.
Thank you, Chief. Through Honorable Chair. The collapse that happened at Majuba coincided, we have responded very positive. As we speak now, we've implemented out of four solutions that we identified. We have implemented the immediate and the gap solution. Those two solutions are making the entire plant to produce 85% of the total capacity. Right now, we are implementing the interim solution that will be completed around September. We are also looking at the permanent solution that we want to perfect and make sure that before end of 2016 it is implemented. I must say, Chair, that as much as it is hectic, the solutions that we have implemented are operated very safe right now. That plant is running, like I said, is declaring 85%. Once we've implemented the interim solution, it will be able to go to 100%, and that is expected to happen between now and September. Then after that, we will be able to implement the permanent solution.
And Chair, the last question in my book, which is according to my numbering, is 59, is the relationship with the FOSA and the Central Energy Fund, whether we are coordinating our activities with the FOSA and the Central Energy Fund. My understanding is that we have signed a memorandum of understanding with both of them, and that these measures are also being coordinated through the war room. I don't know if Mr. Zimbalika wants to talk about what...
It's true that we do have a relationship with PetroSA. As a matter of fact, they are members of the subcommittees that deals with diesel, and then looking forward to permanent solutions. So there is a memorandum of understanding signed with them, as well as SFF. Thank you. It's part of the where the subcommittee also.
Is part of some comments. Chair, I think that takes care of all the questions.
This has been a marathon, 2 hours, 10 minutes, and 70 questions. But now I can see other members have follow-up questions. As I indicated earlier on, we are running behind schedule. Let's allow each, because we must be out of here by in the next 15 minutes. Let's allow them to 1 minute, 1 minute, 1 minute. Well, let's start. Honorable Member Mohamed Salah, the Honorable Member for Energy, Honorable Fandam, yes. That's all this way, and then we'll end up this way.
Thank you. Sir, I chose not to interrupt Mr. Maleka when he was responding on the question I raised on 5.10. The question I raised on 5.10 was not about the areas of focus, but I think, because I think I'm empowered when it relates to the key focus areas of 5.10. My question was very simple. In line with 5.10, they've crafted their own area of focus. And on slide 45, Eskom says they want to resolve critical issues which they have as a power issues through the appointment of senior managers. Now I'm asking, what are these critical issues? That was the question. What critical issues are those which you want to resolve? We need to know those issues. And Chair, my follow-up question, the gentleman which spoke from the board, he says that they've got more board meetings than required. Now, I want to check the objective behind having more board meetings than required and the vision for that. Thank you.
Thank you,
Chairperson. The question was, well, maybe I didn't hear it, but the question wasn't answered about the municipalities versus Soweto and the international clients. How much that data is, so we didn't hear anything about that and how you would be managing that. And then there was the question which I asked about the smelters. I think the answer that was given is quite ludicrous. If you say they are needing a certain amount of electricity and you have to load shed people because you don't have it, and then you say if you cut off people, you need to find another customer for those, for that which you would be saving, it just doesn't make any sense. So I think that in the future, maybe you should explain why that is, because I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me, and if it doesn't make sense to me, it won't make sense to anybody else out there. It just doesn't, it's nonsensical.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I want to stress two further points. The first one is this idea of Eskom's project management. Apparently, if it comes from an investment analyst, the board might take more seriously than just the politician. But in a documentary by Investec in 2014 and the following today, the problem is that the managers of the state-owned enterprise are not making very good fits of project management. The important projects are well behind time and well over original budget, contributing to cost overruns and effects on consumers. So, that thing, or the Jefferson asked me whether I had hard facts or proof. Well, I'm comfortable back in his court. Why don't you run an audit of how well project management has worked under your being preceded and make the results publicly available? And let us see how well you actually have done. If you have done well, I'll be first to applaud. But I doubt that you have. So instead of asking me for the hard facts, you're the entity, provide the hard facts, and prove that you're doing a good job. Chair, I'd also like to ask, in terms of the total number of executives, and there are quite a few that the taxpayer are paying for, I'm very keen to understand how many of them are actually electrical or electric engineers, and what are the total years of experience among board members? Because you're making huge decisions with huge money, and I would question whether you have the ability to make those decisions. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson. Similarly, my questions about Soweto and municipal debt were not answered. I asked in the report that it says municipalities owe 5 billion. In 2014, in January this year, we're told Eskom owed 4 billion. What has happened to that 4 billion Eskom owes? And then I also asked that in the report it says here that Eskom has been restricted from disconnecting municipalities. How has it been restricted? Who has given this instruction? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Listen, I don't have questions. Mine is more clarity. We're happy that Hansel and the parliamentary monitoring exist for a reason. To the CEO, I did not say that it's normal. I said it has become a state of normality, and the fact that we experience load shedding should not be a state of normality. That's normal, and we as South Africans should not have to accept it. That's what I said. Secondly, Chairperson, I have with me, which I'm going to give to both the CEO, because I think he needs a copy, and most certainly to Ms. Pooley, the head of HR, because clearly she also needs a copy, a letter written to me by the Minister herself, dated the 3rd of March 2015, in which she gives me dates back to 2004 that include 2013 and 2014, where she lists the bonuses that were paid out, which instead have not been paid out for the last 2 years. And just as an example, I can tell you that in 2013, Brian Armish received 3.262 million rand worth of bonuses, and in 2014, 1.928 million rand bonuses. Also, list all your executives so you can have a look and see what every single one of your executives have earned, including those that resigned in July 2013 and resigned in 2013, but still received bonuses in 2014. And then just to further clarify, because I understand that you might be a bit confused about all of this, following the answer you gave me, Minister herself said the total remuneration, all inclusive, for the 10 executives for the 12-month period ended the 31st of March 2014, which falls within that two-year period to which you said I would incorrect, was 53,073,000 rand. This includes termination payments related to Ryan Darmus to the amount of, and I'm sorry, that's where I was wrong, it wasn't 5 million, it was actually 15,367,000 rand. And I've had copies made for you in the CEO. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, I think before this meeting, Chairman, I think we should learn this from my peace room before we start exchanging clothes. A peace room, not a war room.
We have a question about, I asked a question, Chair, CEO, about your demobilization program and how it works. In particular, I raised an issue about the discrimination that is faced by both workers and the demobilized workers who come from other provinces. And so far, the approach that we took is concerned. Remember, I said that I written, you know, numerous letters to the previous executives, the suspended ones, let me get my terminology correct. And I didn't get any joy from that. So I'm hoping that now that it's a new team, it will fill up from where we left off. And the second issue is, maybe let's put politics aside and face this question properly. It's less about whether people are going to afford electricity or not, and more about whether or not we've taken steps in the country to cushion the poor from the tariff increases. I'm not convinced that we've done that very well. I think there's still enough scope and enough room to provide better protection to the poor. The question was about that. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. Chairperson, I think I'm going to be the first one to admit that this 2.5 hours is certainly not enough for us to have a meaningful dialogue with the new board, acting chairman and the acting CEO. And I'd like to suggest that in a matter of 2 or 3 weeks, when they've also on their feet, that they have another interaction and dialogue with them, so we can get answers to some of the unanswered questions. But what I want to follow up on, Chairperson, is this is the question of the suspensions of these four members. I'm not satisfied that that question has been adequately answered. They've been suspended for about 4 months now. The salaries will continue to be paid, every salary for another 3 or 4 months or whatever it is, right, which is a burden on Eskom, burden on the taxpayer, and we cannot have this matter hanging in the air. And the reason I use the expression fingers in the cookie jar is, you know, in governments or even in the SOE, nobody gets suspended for incompetence. In fact, it gets, on the contrary, they get rewarded for incompetence. We find that in many instances, they get promoted to different departments. So there must be something wrong in the state of Denmark. Some prima facie evidence that is being hidden from us and the public of South Africa. What was the reason that gave rise to that suspension to have been effected in the first place, which received the approval and blessing of the president of this country? We need those answers, Madam Chairperson. Thank you.
No, thanks, Chair. First, I was just clarifying myself. I think I see selective. Was very selective in my question around the issue of no point of having electricity. I gave the around what did I spend that. You are so proud to say that men and women that are seated there, they've got wealth of knowledge and experience to ensure that we find ESCOM in the correct footing. The point that I was making was to say that it can't be correct that all of these gains in terms of electrification in our country are being rolled back by the incompetencies that we see in ESCOM. Hence, I said, it is pointless to say that you want to switch on the light and then you find that there's no electricity. Sit with this welfare people are supposed to make sure that we've got electricity. That was my point. I think you really misunderstood me. The follow-up question. Sir, we should be really complaining and should be very much emotional about this particular issue. More so when you understand, again, the wealth of relations that is said by the city. People see that men and women are committed to turn the situation around. We are becoming so emotional with the issue because we are looking up to them to ensure that we've got life and ESCOM is stable for the benefit of everybody who's supposed to benefit out of it. The good thing that we know, we used to know that ESCOM can actually deliver. That's why we complain and so we really be emotional about all of this issue. And it is really unfathomable that you say that workers, you can't be held responsible for private contractors that are not treating workers well. I think there are pieces of legislation that are empowering you sufficiently to say that each and every private sector that has to engage. This is how you need to relate with the workers and all of that to avoid the very same problem that was featured with now. Had we heeded to the call of workers, maybe we would find ourselves in strikes and all of that. The intervened when in time, maybe we would have been far ahead with the program of the very same power stations. So really, what your other bill, I don't think really is that one is about the labor relations issues, about the particular about the private contractors. You need to rein in and give guidance to people that are not compliant to the legislations of labor relations and other pieces of legislation. Thanks.
Mine, which was not answered, was on the move by the national president not to release the allocations to the defaulting municipalities. Does it mean that move did not yield any result? Because I was expecting an answer, which says, after that move by the president of the 20 defaulting municipalities, as the registry of DSF, 17 years and happy to an agreement or some sort of like that. The last one, I want to direct it to the government. And this one talks to the shareholder comments. Are the consequences for non-performance with regard to benefits in terms of the shareholder comments? I'm raising this thing because we've been singing this song, I don't know if it's way. And singing it doesn't seem to be winning. We are expected to conduct oversight over the government and the issues. And we don't know what kind of agreement has been entered into between the department and those entities. It can't be right. I think this time around we are talking about this thing for the best. It should be for the last time that we talk about shareholder contract and the concept between the department and the entities. Because we are supposed to be conducting the oversight. How kind of oversight do we conduct without knowing what is it that has been entered into between the department and the entities? So I'm raising this thing because it will be talking about this thing without seem to be winning. So I'm saying, are there enough consequences? If they are there, are they impossible? Are they enough? It can be clarified. And I have a and I'm directing this one to the department. And it's not an issue I've raised for the very, very time. And I hope this time around we'll get a clear outcome on this particular issue. Thank you.
That was the last follow-up question. Can we allow the board members to give a response so that we can wrap up and close the meeting?
Sorry, there's another question that was not answered, and that related to how much electricity is going to be used.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Oh, sorry. Desco, it doesn't matter if we have 100 meetings a month or one meeting a month. There is no financial gain to those meetings. It's a qualified amount paid. And therefore, there is no incentivization for holding extra meetings. We have a lot of meetings because, as you yourselves, honorable members, have pointed out, the issues facing ESCOM are national issues, and they are very serious in terms of implications. We are committed to ensure energy security.
Sorry. Who's
joining
us? It's me. After
your preamble is out of order. No one says here you have more meetings because there's financial implications in it. We want to know objectives. Or have more meetings than the point. The preamble is rather out of order.
The person, if I apply to another member, attributed the financial motive. But I was just clarifying, because some point, the fees paid increased the attendance at meeting. So I was just excluding that possibility. We are there because we're a new board coming at the time of serious implications in terms of energy security and affordable power for the people. compliance with environmental regulatory obligations, and of course, ensuring excellence in performance. These are issues we have been teasing out, as Dr. Bettinelli spoke to you about the deep dives that are going on in the new board build program, as well as the board review program. They require a lot of time, there's huge documentation that comes with it. So we just had to meet to catch up. Which are the low-hanging fruits that we have? The CE touched on that. If we can deal with those low-hanging fruits, we will minimize the need to secure the 3,000 megawatts to allow us to do planned outages and even unplanned outages. So there's a lot of work. If we had our way and all board members were able to afford this, we could be meeting every day to get to grips with the problem. Thank you.
Chairperson, do you allow other board members to respond to other questions, or the CE will do so? The follow-up questions.
Well, since most of the questions are follow-up to the CE's presentation, I think you should deal with that. And then if there's still time, then we can ask different board members.
The first question was about the critical issues that 5.10 needs to deal with at power stations. And I think it's not so really sort of the issues at power stations that need to deal with.
Can you see Honorable Chair? Three ones come to mind. The first one is critical vacancies that we have at the power stations, and therefore trying to use the current skills that we have so that we don't have to hire. That was the one motivation. The second one is that the people at head office are more experienced, and by going to the stations, they can actually coach and mentor and increase the capacity within the stations. And then the last one is we are viewing the current state of the system at ESCOM as being as unusual. So we said everyone's got capacity to go and lend a hand must go to the front line and improve the availability of the grid. So those are the critical things of the stations. Thanks.
Chair, then the next question was about the effects upon quantification as well as the quantification of Soweto and what it will benefit. Members will remember that I have tried to explain that going forward what we're trying to do is bypass the municipalities, but it is a matter that will require discussion in government, with the regulator, as well as ESCOM. But I will ask the CFO to quantify the debt municipalities that are outstanding as well as Soweto.
Thank you, CE. Honorable Chair, in terms of the outstanding debt for municipalities, I think we indicated in our slide area that unit debt overdue is about 4.5 billion rand. The municipalities, and you will know that in total we do have about 9 billion, which means we do get some that are current and then for paying. The Soweto debt is also another debt that we are checking and monitoring, and the total is currently sitting at about 8 billion. Mm-hmm. And in terms of the processes that are being followed, I'm going to ask Mr. Devil Governor, because he's basically looking at the technical side of following up with municipalities and basically our customers, and he will just elaborate there.
In terms of the chief executive has answered the question around how we manage the issue around the community. Around Soweto, obviously that problem has come for a very long time and it runs very deep. What we've been doing for the last 2 years is running a program where we are converting areas of Soweto into what we term Sydney Trim, which is a form of Sydney. In rolling out quite a few of the areas. Obviously, we do pick up resistance from the community, but we are prevailing with that, but it is moving very slowly. And where we do have issues where, in blocks where some people are willing to convert to a detail meter or a split meter and others are not, we actually have now started disconnections of areas to encourage people that we all need to move to the issue of the meter. But like the chief executive said, the strategy that we are still dealing with board and experts on how we manage the debt of the letter, it's only debate.
Chair, on the issue of the who's going to ask sponsorship of municipalities, there were court cases, there was talk about it, I think it's much other than this one.
Thank you, committee members. Thank you, C. What has happened in the past is that most of these parties that took to court probably wanted to be 7 years of life. Then what the costs will ask us to follow a process, we have to notify and follow the process of being asked on the time. We have to then consider considerations that are made by these to date, there's about four actions that are still in court, and all of them come to a standstill when we have to terminate, because the municipalities already find ways to go back and take us back to court and a new legal alignment. The last legal alignment that was brought by the family was that the agreement that we concluded with the Machame municipality was not concluded by a properly authorized municipality. So we had to go back to court and argue that point out. But as we speak, we have been for a process that has been mandated by the court to say, before the assembly, please follow the larger process.
There was a question about the project management and the income as well as about companies and project management. I will ask the other one.
Thank you. In as far as project management in this mega project is concerned, I think from the ESCOM point of view, when we started this project, we made a point that we do a study to identify the gaps in terms of the skills required for this project. And that led to a process where we contracted some of the international project companies to come and supplement the current skills that we have in South Africa. And that was done to make sure that we have the necessary tools to execute this project and make sure that we deliver this project within the quality that is required. However, over and above that, what we've done, we've also brought some companies like PwC to come and do the audit in terms of the entire project management of these companies to identify the shortfalls, if there are shortfalls, so that we can be able to close those gaps. From that point of view, the competency that is sitting in this project from the ESCOM point of view is adequate to make sure that we complete this project and complete this project as soon as possible. But over and above that, we also know that some of the contractors that are executing the work within this project are international companies. So they bring their own experts who are very skilled in terms of executing these complex projects that we are sitting with. So from that perspective, looking at what we've brought to supplement ourselves, what are the audit reports saying in terms of the entire project management, we are satisfied that we are doing the right thing. But those audits, it's not the ones of audits. After 2 years, we are again audits the setup within those projects. Thank you.
Chair, the next question was, how many members here in both Expo and in the board are engineers? Perhaps they are not going into specific subjects as the engineers system.
Chair members, let me speak on behalf of the electrical engineers. My name is... Who is the speaker speaking on behalf? He's saying he's speaking on behalf of electrical engineers.
Yeah, answering the question.
But on behalf of who? He says speak on behalf of them. Where then? Who are they? How many are they?
He's going to give us answers here, then we'll
do it next year. No, thank you, member. Firstly, thank you for the question. Thank you for the aspiration behind the question. I will speak in my capacity as the immediate past president of the South African Institute of Electrical Engineers. I fully subscribe
that the expectation is that registered professional engineers deal with matters pertaining to registered engineers. That conversation we have commenced. We have commenced with ourselves as the board and within the executive and within the entire organization. And we'll deepen that conversation as we go forward. So my expectation as an electrical engineer, a registered electrical engineer, is that electrical engineers registered will deal with matters pertaining to electrical engineering. Specifically. Thank you.
Can I also add engineers?
Chair, can I also ask that you also said that you did get for another doctorate in engineering in July in Glasgow?
So almost half of the members of the board of EFCOM are Indians. That's a good sign that we are doing. Was that the last question?
No.
Oh, okay.
Then there was a question of the bonuses. Manzoni talked about the bonuses, and just want to point out that the answer by the human resources executive was correct, because the bonuses that Ms. Manzoni was referring to are the LTI bonuses that have been earned in previous years and that were being paid out during those years that they were recorded as bonuses. So what happens typically is that to retain executives, when they earn a bonus in a particular year, a portion of it can be withheld or an extra portion can be given to them, but it does not pay immediately. So the bonus that they earn in 2012 will get paid in 2015, or a portion will be paid in 2015. It will happen that 2015, you do not get the short-term incentive. But the bonus that you get equals in 2015, you will get because you are still with the company, which is what is used by the company to retain employees. So they withhold a portion of the bonus back and only pay to you if you're still with the company after a certain number of years. And I would think that was the reason that it will appear in the books that bonus were paid in those years. And in fact, it is a fact that in the last 2 years, bonuses to be more precise, short-term incentive bonuses were not paid, including long-term incentive bonuses that would vest in a few years' time. They were not paid in the last 2 years. The immobilization problem, I will ask Mr. Abraham Masego to explain.
Thank you, Chief. Through you, Honorable Chair. In terms of these big projects, as your owner spoke about the framework that we put in place, within that framework, there is a demobilization procedure that needs to be followed and adhered to by the contractors when the work is complete as they are doing. Now, one of the challenges that we are having in some of these projects. As you know, that these projects are halfway through. When the contractor completes work, he has to demobilize the employees. Now, our role at ESCOM is to ensure that the contractor then complies those demobilization procedures. For example, if the work is finished, the contractor will leave the site. And when the contractor leaves the site, he leaves with his employees. But there are certain things that need to be done, for example, the UIF, etc., for the workers to make sure that we keep, to ensure that we do not have a situation whereby when the workers are sitting at home or working somewhere, they still have some outstanding issues that need to be closed. So these mobilization procedures are there in place. It's a matter of compliance by the contractors as they demobilize and as they demobilize their workers. So as I said, our accountability is to make sure that they adhere to those demob procedures so that we avoid IR issues that might emerge out of them not complying to the mobilization procedures. Through you, Chair, I've heard that the honorable member has raised certain issues that were not attended properly. I think it's welcome as well to bring it to our attention so that we can be able to deal with those issues adequately. But over and above this, you must always understand that there is a ratio between the core and the non-core. Hence, the procedures to guide that process to, eliminate discrimination that might be made. So I will appeal to the Honorable Chair that if there's still a concern, it be brought to our attention, then we'll be able to attend it. Thank you, Chair.
I would like to apologize if there has been misunderstandings, but I agree with the sentiment that was expressed that we need strategies to cushion the poor from talent issues. We need strategies to do that. And I think that with engagement with the regulator, as well as government, we should go into the matter of devising strategies to cushion the poor from electricity current issues. It is a very important. And I apologize if there was I think Chair Mr. Singh said that we should come back, and we are ready to come back whenever we are called. On our intervention on site action and really the contracting item, because we contract with the people that contract you and they hire the labor. If somebody who is building your house, to what extent do you have been in labor matters between the guy who is building your house and his customer relationship? We will have to take legal advice on it. In fact, I would like to get legal advice on what we have done so far and what it is that we should do without, by our actions, committing ourselves to additional obligations over and above the contract that we signed with the contractor. So, I mean, to what extent can say that we pay additional over and above the contracted amounts? So, I hear that we need to make sure that the labor relations are sound between our contractor and the employees. At the same time, we must be wary of committing the company to additional obligations that are above what we contracted to the contractor. And so we need legal advice on this because it may lead to runaway costs that were originally not part of how the project was implemented. But I do need legal advice. Chair, I'm not sure what the impact has been by the move not to release the money by Treasury, by the CFO, what's the comment, or whether that move by the Treasury not to release money led to municipalities paying.
In terms of the municipalities that aren't paying, I think Mr. Governor will assist the game before anything that I do out. I think what is critical to note is that in some cases the National Treasury has held back the equitable share that would ideally go to the municipalities. But the intention is that they then would come back to EFCON and make payment arrangements and make sure that they honor them. And I think we still go through the process with the municipalities, some who have made arrangements and some who have not honored the arrangements that they have made. And we continuously then monitor the situation and who is honoring, who is honoring the arrangements made and who is not paying. And the equitable share is however told between the municipality and the National Treasury in terms of the law. And that would then remain that way. But we are monitoring those that aren't honoring the payment or the arrangement as agreed.
So the last question was about how much we lose through the theft of electricity, and I will ask Ayanda, Noah, or Tabu to shed some light on how much we lose.
Thank you to you, Honourable Chairman. If you are looking at the energy losses as a percentage, currently below 7%, basically what that means is that the losses of the energy that you have sold, is less than 7%. So the exact figure for this year is 6.78%. Now, that number basically, you can see that I'm interested, where 60% of that number is actually technical losses as a result of the network characteristics. So if you look at you know, the type of conductor that you use and so on, it will give you a certain resistivity that is then going to determine how much losses are. So that's the technical side of it. On the non-technical side, which I think is probably more of what you're asking, is as a result, is about 40% of that 3.78% that I've given you. And it basically talks to where people are connecting illegally. It's talking about, you know, areas where we might have some admin issues, for example, customers that are not billed or incorrect bills. It might also link to what we call ghost vendors, which is a challenge that we have in the company side. So that component of it is about 40%, as I have said. And we estimated that last year we lost about over 2 billion in terms of the losses as a total. However, through the initiatives that we're putting in place, we are seeing an improvement this year. We've estimated about 650 million that we're going to be able to save this year as a result of the initiatives that we're putting in place. One of the initiatives, I think it was alluded to earlier, is the Operation Hanisa program that we're currently running. But the other critical one is that when it comes to illegal connections, we do disconnect where it's possible. But what we also do with illegal connections, where it is practical, we actually prioritize those people for electrification so that they can have electricity legally. And the other point that has already been mentioned is that we do strict metering, which has already been spoken about by Saba. And that is primarily something that we're driving in places like Soweto so that we can reduce on the losses. So those are some of the initiatives, if I can just mention. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, we are done with the follow-up questions. But now, before we wrap up, I just want to check with the shareholder if you have anything to say. Just 2 seconds. We don't hear you actively. Thank you very much. Chaplain, your last words?
Well, it wasn't. There was a board member who wanted to make a statement.
Okay. Let's announce him or her. Is it him? It's her. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Madam Chair. And thank you to the Commission members. What I do is make a statement to both of the Commission members that the sentiments expressed today are fully understood by the board. The crisis, the situation that we're in, the economy of the country, we're certainly not disillusioned by what's happening at ESCOM. And we're certainly looking to identify and provide transparency between ESCOM and South Africa. We're hoping that the inquiry will obviously give us an independent view and clarify issues, and obviously help us to sort of guide and determine the solution to the problem. I mean, there were comments made as to whether we're providing guidance. We are providing guidance, but over and above that, we're probing. I mean, the questions that have been asked, you have been the questions that have been asked in the last few months that we have arrived. I mean, this is a made strong commitment that we're making a stance to complying with our duties of regulatory agencies, complying with the TFN Act, and the making of South Africa. When we started, you made a comment that you want to use you to help. I'd like to reiterate what Mr. Malenka said, and that is South Africa's help.
Thank you very much. CEO, you want to say something?
It's very encouraging that the Chandelier of Parliament low voltage right, and not all of them are connected, and it's something that all can
thank you, CEO. Let me give you the this opportunity to use that room for the month.
What do you mean, Chair? Thank you. And the honorable members of your committee, you have this hearing, and we look forward to further intense interaction. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. The meeting is not yet urgent. Can we please sit down and if you are not part of this meeting? I'm going to make a closing remark, honorable members. I think, let me start by thanking ESCOM under the leadership of Mr. Benny Mubani to share with us the insight of what is happening in ESCOM. Yes, in the past we had this interaction, but I think today it gave us more clarity and our fears are now being alleviated because we thought maybe the country is falling apart. But with this interaction today, we are a little bit comfortable, and indeed it brings hope and confidence that our country is not in crisis, but we are having challenges which the CE has clearly outlined that these challenges are going to be addressed in this manner. And we will request the board and the executive to say, let's not take long, but we can monitor and closely see what's happening about the discussion of today, as Honorable Chair has said. But most importantly is that there is a plan which is workable, which is implementable, and we are really pleased to realize that we have professionals in ESCOM. One of the reasons why we wanted the entire board to come, without seeing the faces, we just wanted to see who are these people? Are they really qualified? Are they up to the challenge? And now we can say with confidence that ESCOM is intent, it will be run professionally and efficiently, and we are very happy and comfortable about the manner in which you address the issue moving forward. With these few words, we wish you all the best. We are with you in this whole thing. In Venda or in Sanani, we say, in the Vienna, this elephant belongs to all of us. Wherever you are, you must know we are with you because we are one country. The success of ESCOM is our success as a country. So there's no way we can wish you down. Lastly, let me address small issues which were a little bit uncomfortable to me, especially when one honorable member was raising. Temperatures were very high, yes, addressing the chair of the board in that manner, and I think we need to apologize on behalf of this committee. That Mr. Mubani, we respect all of us, we must respect one another, and some of the members also from the energy were raising, the language was not so respectful. So this is not how we should conduct our business. We should respect one another, irrespective of positions we hold. And with these few words, I would like to...
Madam Chair, sorry. I just want to know, were the minister invited to this meeting? Because I noticed in the minutes of last week that an invitation should have been extended to her. Just for the record.
Invited, yes, sir. Thank you. Christine, you are disrupting my closing remarks for and I'm now dislocated. Let me once more say thank you very much for the insight, and we'll interact with you not long, so as to enable us to be on board and keep the country concept. And one last issue which I really wanted to emphasize, because I'm now citizen, is the issue of communication. You know, there's this perception that ESCOM is has gone down the drain. And with all the information given us today here, I think we would like to communicate even more aggressively to the public, to the millions of our country, in all the modes, in all the places, to give us hope. Because if we go through that, there's a small section within our society which wants to make us believe that we're at the brink of collapse. So communication is very critical. You are doing a good job as ESCOM, but we did not communicate it. Thank you very much.
Yeah.